It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A new broadcast week begins, the first broadcast week of June 2019, and what a lovely weekend we had here. Golly Moses, as, well, just as is always the case, here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump, Virginia-stan, the first Saturday in June turned out to be rainless and beautiful. It was nothing short of magnificent. I got to go and play outside and work up my my curry recipe. Had to have something vegetarian to cook for Malloy Fest, which begins, well, which takes place this week. Remember, no programs Thursday and Friday of this week. I'll be on the road and picking folks up at the airport in Atlanta, and then Friday and Saturday and Sunday are Malloy Fest and heading home, and I will either be back to air either Monday or Tuesday. Better likelihood of Tuesdays, but just because need the extra day, you know, turning in the rental car and all of that crap. But I'm looking forward to meeting a bunch of truth seekers and members of the Horn Family Community Congregation there. It should be a real blast, and the brisket goes on the smoker first. Followed by the ribs, and then I'll do the curry while I'm down there. It doesn't require any real, you know, smoking or grilling or anything like that. No. And maybe one other menu item as well. Just kind of depends on how things work out. Every program here begins with gratitude, because since there are no Buy Gold Now ads no urgent messages that you buy a vacuum cleaner that picks up bowling balls off a Swedish mattress made of foam developed by NASA, we rely on the goodwill of the community. And so, consequently, we have thanks to send out to the June 1st and June 2nd and June 3rd subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Janice. Thank you to Stephen. Thank you to Gene and Ann. Thank you to John. Thank you to Rocco. Thank you to Reggie. Thanks to David. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thanks very kindly to Lauren, our correspondent in far Alberta. Thank you to John in North Carolina. Thank you to Joseph. Thank you to Rusty. Thanks to Smitty in Florida. Thank you to Peter. Thank you to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. That's our subscribers for the first 3 days of the month. And I will note that Bruce's Memorial Challenge is on the table today. It is the first broadcast day of June. So there's a $200 challenge on the table, and if folks will... jump on that, then, and we can, well, if we can get $200 in, $200 will double it to four, and that'll take care of Thursday, And then we'll be well on the way. So there's a $200 challenge on the table, and let's see if we can knock that out so that I'm not, you know, sweating while I'm on the road and can get some early bill paying done. So that's where we stand. There's again Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Courtesy of Laborman and Ralphs and an anonymous contributor who put that forward every month. Hopefully, you know, everybody else sort of jumping in and doubling it. It would be monumentally helpful because we don't have ads. Because the community supports the ongoing process of this program. Youch, Sparky says it's 100 degrees in the man cave. Yeah, no space folding for Sparky, I don't think. It's a comfortable 77 here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Yesterday was beautiful. Today, I'm not sure which. I'd say probably today qualified as the most beautiful day thus far of 2019. It was mighty nice. Didn't have to take Ferg to work this morning. He works the night shift, and he's working 11 to 7 last night and today. Thank heaven for small favors. Yeah. Program note. Like I said, no program Thursday, Friday, probably Monday. The following week, I will be going to D.C. to do more ache work, but I'm taking the road rig with me. So we will have programs while I'm gone. And that will be, I'll be reporting back on the progress of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the ACE Act, H.R. 2050 in the House, and our ongoing efforts to get more people signed on to it so that it can develop the momentum necessary to be passed in this Congress. And, those are the two major program notes. And then here in about, 50 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by my buddy of long standing, friend of my youth, the rockin' eco hero, Steve Trash. He's got a new TV show debuting. And if you've got a youngster or a kid or a grandkid, you'll want to check around to see if it's been picked up by your public television purveyor. And if it hasn't, you might want to ask for it. It's going to be, I know the kind of work that Steve does, and it's going to be an amazing delight for kids of all ages, as the saying goes. Steve is a master magician, and he is also dedicated all the way, he always has been, dedicated to doing his part for trying to save the ability of this planet to support human life. So that'll be coming up in about, like I said, 50 minutes or so. But before we get to any of that, let's see. Let's check in on a little bit of email. This in from Kyle. As the list of possible reasons to impeach the orange asshole grows day by day with more evidence of his inability to govern and his abject criminality come to light, I keep going back to this one thought. When he wasn't impeached after he took the side of Vladimir Putin, the man who oversaw the hacking of the 2016 U.S. election over all U.S. intelligence and then shared secrets with Sergei Kislyak in the White House, it should have been clear he was never going to be. Trump really is above the law as long as he's in office. I hate to sound defeatist, but I think that's where we are. Well, I think we're getting closer. I think we will be in a stronger position. I still believe, and that I understand, dangerous word, believe. We're in a dangerous time, and our only way out of it will be if we can develop the necessary evidence with which to impeach him and convince the American people, if not the United States Senate. Because the United States Senate is run by a group of Republicans who care more about their accession to power than they do the Constitution to which they swore an oath. Remember, George W. Bush said it was just a goddamn piece of paper. And apparently that's the way the Senate Republicans feel about it as well. And this morning when I tuned into my filthy little morning habit, there they were, hand-wringing and pearl-clutching. Claire McCaskill, chief among them, former senator from Missouri, talking about how in private the senators say they can't stand Trump, but then in public that they don't dare speak out because they fear for their jobs. It struck me as a bit of it, well, and there's, you know, they've got, you know, with these earnest protestations of, they've got to come to their senses. They've got to stand up for the Constitution. Oh, lady, come on. Maybe it's a little more understandable now why you were defeated. And then the word moderate Republican was bandied about by Jeff Daniels, who was doing an appearance on set to promote Aaron Sorkin's stage version, a complete rewrite of To Kill a Mockingbird. And he talked about how his dad was a moderate Republican and he would just be disgusted by Trump. And again, there was reference to, and this is hand in hand with Maureen Monday. There was a reference to, you know, we need the return of the moderate Republicans. Buddy, those things are extinct. They're goner than the dodo and the passenger pigeon put together. There's not even a fossil record of moderate or liberal Republicans to be had anywhere in the United States. They're no more. They're singing with the choir eternal. They're pushing up daisies, pining for the fjords, all of that. Moderate Republicans. The only way to save our nation and save the Constitution of the United States is to defeat and destroy. Defeat Donald Trump and destroy maggotism or Trumpism. That's it. Nothing else. And that means electing Democrats. And, you know,
God damn it, Bob, neoliberal establishment shill. Stop telling us how to defeat Trumpism. There, we've gotten that out of the way.
But that's the reality. And I found it interesting to see things that I've said here more or less echoed in an essay I ran across over the weekend. Posting a commentary piece at Salon, Lucian K. Truscott IV examined Republican behavior and Mitch McConnell's behavior. The headline reads, "Go ahead, impeach Trump, and watch what Mitch McConnell does." I also spent some time over the weekend, thanks to Sparky, reading the impeachment manual, the Senate's impeachment manual, and I found it interesting. I have not completely digested it yet. But Lucian Truscott takes the same view of the likely behavior of Mitch McConnell as, well, as I. He notes at the end of his piece, the Constitution doesn't say how the Senate has to go about handling articles of impeachment other than when the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside. It doesn't say the Senate must hold a trial. It only says when. Now, I've taken it of late that McConnell would have to have something that resembled a meeting of a constitutional mandate, but that's absolutely true. You can go to the Constitution and you can say when the, and you can see it, when the President of the Senate is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside. You could almost replace in terms of sorting out the possibilities, what, you know, replace the word when with the word if. When sounds like it might be mandatory, like it might have some sort of shall qualities to it. But as Lucian Truscott points out, the Constitution also says the President shall appoint a Supreme Court justice with the advice and consent of the Senate. And asks, how's that, do the words Merrick Garland hold any meaning for you? Right. So this is not to say they won't do it. I hope they do it. But I hope no one, I hope exactly no one, is expecting Mitch McConnell to do anything either constitutional or, God knows, patriotic. Because he's already said he's not going to. So let's just understand that from jump. Now, let's say 100,000 people surrounded the Capitol and made Mitch McConnell live in his office for a couple of months, unable to emerge from either his office or the Capitol complex generally. Maybe something might happen then. But the cable's still on, the bills have to still be paid, and the iron fist is still inside the velvet glove, so the likelihood of getting 100,000 people or so to camp out around the Capitol for a month or two, I'd say that's pretty slim. But it's still as close a chance as we have. So there you go. Lucian Truscott writes with real clarity and puts all his words together real, real goodly-like. And he doesn't seem to be any more sanguine about Mitch McConnell's behavior than am I. You know, we had the shooting in Virginia Beach, and we discussed it on Friday's program. Over the course of the weekend, more information as a 12th person was announced as having died in the attack. We learned what kind of a weapon he used. Here, before we move on, let's check in on. There we go. Let's be honest here, says Steve in New York. Nixonism equals Reaganism equals Bushism equals Trumpism. Let's never forget that. On another note, I found that AOC is the congressperson for my new neighborhood. I've never been excited about my congressperson. Isn't it kind of cool? But yeah, John Birthers, Goldwater Republicans, you know, they just, Klansmen, McCarthyites, they just continue to morph into new shapes as time marches on. But they remain essentially the same. Note coming from Matt in San Francisco. To impeach or not to impeach? My opinion on whether this will end in Trump's actual impeachment changes from 1 hour to the next. I know the feeling, Matt. However, I keep coming back to the fact of what is the correct and moral imperative. Worrying about what the Republicans will do, say, or act as is an exercise in mental masturbation. They show daily they will do whatever they have to in order to retain power. And I'd say that sums it up quite nicely. So not moving forward from fear that the Republicans will do what they always do, to me, is something we do not have the luxury of even considering. It's time to take a page out of their book and move forward with complete talking points. Utilize every legal means available and move to change public opinion so that no matter how it ends, the public will throw Trump's ass out of office after the information is clear and undeniable. If the Republicans can damage a president for an affair and steal the next election, surely the Dems can get it together to throw everything they can dig up and hope it sticks. Follow that with a get-out-the-vote effort like never seen, and let's fucking fight for once. And I largely agree, Matt. I add one caveat. If you think back to the Clinton impeachment, and you think of what a circus the media turned it into, and the fact that you had Ken Starr leaking like a sieve day in and day out. One of those leakers is sitting on the Supreme Court now in the form of Brett Kavanaugh. The for-profit media lapped it up like a kitty over a dish of cream. Democrats will not be the recipient of anything resembling breathless, oh my gosh, golly treatment that the Republicans got from the multimillionaire for-profit media. Remember Les Moonves? Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS. And so it'll be every time he runs to the podium to have a conniption, there'll be cameras there to carry it live. I doubt that it'll be anything similar in regard to the impeachment proceedings. That's my only caveat. Yeah, let's do it. I hope he is impeached. I personally am willing to wait until the issue, and I've explained why, I'm willing to wait until the issue of the subpoenas has been either decided or rejected entirely, Trump's appeals rejected entirely by the Supreme Court, because then you're going to get a lot more information. And as I've said before, you get one shot. It's think of impeachment as a muzzle loader. You get one chance. And in addition to convincing the nation, there are some Democrats that have to be brought along. If you want to talk about dangerous, when that thing goes to the Senate, whatever happens, the Democrats in the Senate have to speak with one voice. Unless, of course, maybe we're talking about Joe Manchin, because Joe Manchin's never been particularly good at voting like a Democrat. And I wouldn't necessarily count on Doug Jones to vote to convict him either, assuming there's a Senate trial. Because he wants to win re-election in Alabama. And I think he recognizes that it was a bit of a one-off that he won in the first place. He would not have beaten Luther Strange or maybe even Mo Brooks Les Brames. It took a perfect storm to get that Democrat in that Senate seat. And it took a determined effort, an absolute get-out-the-vote effort of tremendous proportions on the part of the African-American community in Alabama, who are the base of the Democratic Party. And it took 20% of Republicans saying, oh, hell no, and either writing in a third, writing in somebody or voting for a third party. But I submit that the Democrats do have to speak with as near to one voice as they can muster. Stephen, New York says, impeach and no trial. Here's where the Democrats have to get really good at politics really quickly. If the Democrats impeach and Mitch McConnellovich, refuses to hold a trial, the Democrats better be immediately prepared to quickly and perpetually tar the GOP with the moniker as the anti-constitutional party, because you know damn well the GOP would do that if the tables were turned. Yep. And they'll probably, and they'll be no more successful at that, no matter how hard they try, than they were with Merrick Garland. I'm so old I can remember when Merrick Garland, when the Democrats thought that Merrick Garland was going to be a big issue in the 2016 election. And then they did some polling and found out the American people did not give a tinker's damn. I mean, we do, but we live in a political bubble. We pay attention to this stuff. Emory and Marvelline didn't give a fuck. So that's where that issue stands. James in Illinois. Surrounding the enemy in D.C., you think Marcus Aurelius wouldn't call out the 82nd? He's working on being able to do that. I mean, that's part, you know, there was some degree of confirmation last week that the guy who was opposite Mike Pompeo in trying to negotiate a furtherance of a deal with North Korea in Vietnam, Kim Jong Bad Golf Pants had him killed. And a couple of others. And his sister even hasn't been seen in a while. And you'll never convince me that Donald Trump would not like to have the same kind of power. But that's who he thinks is his buddy. You know, a murderer. He's got murderers for buddies. But then again, considering how long he's been wrapped up with the Russian mob, I guess he's always had murderers for buddies. Scott in San Diego says, in regard to 100,000 folks surrounding the Capitol, in October and November of 1969, my 15-year-old self was part of two different crowds five times that size for a day, twice in D.C. As for 100,000 showing up in 2019 goes, ain't gonna happen. There's a big difference between then and now. In 1969, kids just a little older than I, along with me, set to play for the same stakes. A few short years later, knew exactly what was, or soon would be, on the proverbial line. Our goddamn lives. Americans today seemingly don't discern that anything much really is at stake. Or if something is on the line, they don't see how it could possibly impact them. Yeah, the draft was a real motivator for that. But again, let me reinforce. If people show up, a million people, if they show up a million people in Washington, D.C. for one day and they turn around and they go home, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Won't have any impact. It has to have the quality of a labor action, a strike. Sit down, don't get back up. He leaves before we leave, that kind of thing. I guess I should say something about the fact that Julius Geezer is now in merry old England. He has been trolled by the coin. She gave him a gift. A rare first edition copy of Winston Churchill's The Second World War. I saw that and chuckled merrily to myself, because it meant that she'd get thrown a little shade his way again. She gave him a book about fighting and destroying Nazis. She gave a guy whose ex-wife said he kept a copy of Hitler's speeches by his bedside a book about killing Nazis. She may be old, but, and I may not think much of the idea of royalty in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, but that was quality trolling. Ron in Raleigh says, as it gets closer, do you think that if we come within a year of the election, if no impeachment hearings have started, Addison McConnell will come up with some bullshit rule that disallows having an impeachment trial within a year of an election? Want to lay a fin on that? Nope. That sounds like something straight out of Chinless Mitch, because recall that he was asked there in Kentucky a week or so ago if a Supreme Court vacancy came open during 2019, within a year of the election, say November on, what would he do? And he said, I'd fill it. And then he and the crowd laughed merrily to themselves, because they realized all along there in Kentucky that the only reason he didn't let Merrick Garland go forward was because he was damn sure not going to let that Negro president appoint any more Supreme Court justices. So there's that. But Bob, says Darlene in Connecticut, wasn't the Occupy movement along the lines of what you're saying, and we know how that wound up? Yeah, it was, but it's the only... Even Occupy managed to shake things up. But again, it's not likely to happen, because there aren't that many people who feel like they actually have skin in the game. It's just one side loves Trump and the other side doesn't love Trump. And, they don't care about the Constitution. A whole lot of this country, 43% or more, won't even bother to exercise their vote. I mean, last week when tornadoes were ripping through the Midwest, a TV station interrupted its broadcast to give a tornado warning, telling people to seek shelter immediately, and the viewing audience had a hissy because they had interrupted a reality program called The Bachelor. That's the America with which we are dealing. Let's see, Dave writing from the blind. I was listening to Randy Rhodes earlier today. The reason that the USS McCain was in port Was in a collision at sea where 10 sailors lost their lives in the line of duty when they were killed, and the commander and thief and his little minions in the White House didn't want the godless emperor to see the USS McCain. So the next time you hear a Trumpanzee pissing and moaning about the military not being respected, remember this hanging with the soft on Russia, soft on North Korea. They sold out to a KGB lieutenant colonel and the god emperor of North Korea, who is a god emperor in North Korea. Dave says, P.S., hope you enjoy Malloy Fest. I will, and I hope everyone else does, too. Responding to the to Bruce's memorial challenge for the beginning of the month, a note from Charlene in Connecticut. Inside that challenge, I'll make a $50 challenge, and I'll add another $25 when it's met. So if we get 50, Charlene doubles it to 100 and adds 25 to it. And that gets us within $75 of completing that challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very, very kindly. Okay, subject line, the Queen's shade. Flavio points out that it was multi-layered shade. She gave a guy who cannot read, who does not read, a fucking book. Scott wants to know, wait, did the Queen give him Winston Churchill's The Second World War coloring book edition? That might be something Trump would have a use for, as long as she included the stadium seating edition of Crayola crayons with the built-in sharpener on the back of the box. You know, that thing never lasted. It got gummed up in wax the first time you tried to sharpen your crayon. On the other hand, a rare volume in with words in it? Well, it's the tits on a boar thing. As in useless as. Steve in New York says, perhaps my emotions are heightened listening to the program tonight. But if there's no trial, we're headed for the mother of all constitutional crises. I've said that our republic's very existence is in the balance to the point of almost being the boy who cried wolf. But what happens if Mikhailovich really doesn't hold a trial? Our republic may be just be unable to reverse course. Well, no, no, it's not going to be quite like that, Steve. It'll just be that there will be a new rule, which is the same old rule, which is I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. George W. Bush committed fucking war crimes. George W. Bush engaged in an illegal war that is that would be illegal for any other country to engage in but the United States. And we were told, we need to look forward and not back. Okay? So it'll just be confirmation that we've impeached one Republican president. Well, two, if you... No, Andrew Johnson was nominally a Democrat. But, you know, Nixon got his, and nobody ever gets to do that ever again unless the president is, in fact, a Democrat. That's what the effect of that will be. It will also elevate the presidency to near godhood. And you know what? This is evolutionary stuff. If you look to the ancient world, oh, Jesus Christ, he's going back to ancient Rome again. Yes, I am. Rome started out as a republic, a republican oligarchy. The Senate, SPQR, Senatus Populusque Romani, the Senate and the people of Rome, or the Senate and the Roman people. And it devolved from there. When it became an empire, its ability to function as a republic was severely diminished. Then you go through the civil wars with Sulla and the first and second triumvirates, and eventually Octavian, Augustus, emerges as the sole ruler. But he's careful to make sure that he does not refer to himself as imperator or anything that smacked of sole rule, because the Romans had a a disgust for the idea of kingship. Oh, dear, I made a terrible mistake. Charlene, I'm so sorry. I said Charlene from Connecticut. Charlene is from Rhode Island. Darlene points out, only I have dominion over Connecticut, LOL. Signed, the other Lean. I apologize, Charlene. I apologize profusely. Sorry about it. And thanks for catching that, Darlene. Damn, I feel stupid. But just to go, so Augustus just considered himself first citizen, and he held the consulship, and he maintained the forms. Sort of like we're maintaining the forms now. But within a couple of hundred years, you eventually get an emperor who really doesn't like that idea of going out and hobnobbing with the hoi polloi. And well before that, the emperor has been deified. The Temple of the Divine Julius on the spot in the Forum where they cremated his remains. That sort of thing. And so that's the direction the United States will go in. The president will become more and more godlike. I mean, we already have laws about the things you can't say about the president. Which sort of came to mind this morning. The panel there on my filthy morning habit included, of all people, Jesus Christ, George Will. But he started talking about the future of the Republican Party and of conservatism, which has always been and always will be a blight upon our body politic. But in talking about the future of conservatism post-Trump, he said, Wallaceism died after George Wallace was shot. And Trumpism will go after Trump is gone. Now they're not gonna take a run after George Will for saying that. He's George effing Will. But if somebody out there said anything like that, they'd probably be getting a visit from those humorless guys with the skinny black ties who talk to their wrists a lot. And it reminded me of the stories about the last days of Julius Caesar when people were running up to him, offering him a crown. Because they wanted a reason to do what was eventually done. But it won't mean the end of the Republic, Steve. It will mean that impeachment has no use, and it will elevate once and for all the president above the law. That's all. Steve in New York says, Winston Churchill, just like Frederick Douglass, Winston Churchill is doing great things and getting more popular. A lot of people don't know, which is what he says when he means, I didn't know. A lot of people don't know. Ron in Raleigh says, maybe that book will be the only volume in the Trump Presidential Library, or more likely end up in the Oval Office circular file. Sadly, that would not surprise me. Now, what I was saying earlier about things we've learned about the shooting in Virginia Beach, which, well, you know, the Memorial Day shootings got, I think, on average, 2 minutes of coverage from the multimillionaire for-profit cable news media. 2 minutes. Well, the Virginia Beach shooting, had some more facts added over the weekend. The disgruntled employee, not lawful gun owner, awful gun owner, none of that, the disgruntled employee, did not use an AR-15. He used a 9mm pistol with extended capacity magazines, of which he had several. He also used what is called a suppressor. And a suppressor is what we often call a silencer. And the usage of that device, and those devices are legal in 26 states, I believe. The use of that device indicated that, well, an evolution, like I said, in the nature of these sorts of mass murders. The shooter in Virginia Beach did not want people to know he was shooting. It is in the essence of training, you know, the way we train 6-year-olds and 5-year-olds to respond to an active shooter drill. A lot of it has to do with if you, you know, when you hear this or when you hear shots, when you hear bangs, and then they teach them what to do, how to try to protect themselves. Well, in the case of Virginia Beach, 11 government workers and one contractor who was pulling permits were murdered because this guy was using, and you know, you have to say suppressor, because if you say silencer, all the gun goobers get butt hurt and start pissing and moaning, "Well, you're not using the right words." Fuck them. The use of the suppressor meant that he wanted to kill as many people as possible without them knowing what was going on and without causing a mass panic. Now, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, that shooter tried to entice people to come into his field of fire. But in Virginia Beach, we have a new tactic. Don't even let them know that you're killing them. And so, lo and behold, we have this from the Washington Post from Saturday. It was back in January when the Senate of the Commonwealth of Virginia introduced a bill, SB 1748. And SB 1748 was a bill to ban the sale of high-capacity magazines just like the ones used by the lawful gun owner in Virginia Beach. And when the bill was introduced, according to the Post story, everyone knew that it was dead on arrival. And the Post points out that because everybody knew it was dead on arrival, that it received almost no news coverage at all. writing, for more than 20 years, Republicans and a few rural Democrats in the General Assembly have killed almost every measure aimed at restricting gun ownership. They continue, the GOP blocked a major push for gun control after the 2007 Virginia Tech shootings, where 33 people died. They chose instead to respond to that shooting by joining Democrats to enact mental health reforms. So it turns out that there was more than one killer in Virginia Beach. There was the guy with the gun and the high-capacity magazines, and there was the entirety of the Republican Party structure of Virginia. And the blood is on all their hands. It, just like it runs down the walls in the headquarters of the National Ruble Association. The Post points out, each year Republicans, Republican majorities in one or both chambers of the legislature vote gun control bills down, usually in committee. They say their goal is never to infringe on people's Second Amendment rights. State Senator Adam P. Eben, a Democrat from Alexandria, Virginia, said there's been no tragedy that has gotten the Republican majority to think twice and consider reasonable efforts. Part of the problem is that Virginia Citizens Defense League and the NRA have a stranglehold on the votes of the Republicans. In other words, the Republican Party in Virginia does not represent any actual Virginians except those who are members of a Virginia gun gang. Philip Van Cleve is the president of the Citizens Defense League, and that organization thinks that the NRA are a bunch of sissies. In an email to the Post, upon inquiry, Van Cleve said, "Gun control does not save lives. It endangers innocent life by making it harder for good people to defend themselves. The GOP leadership understands that basic truth." The NRA, meanwhile, did not respond to requests for comment. Give them credit, they've got better sense than that. They'll wait to slur and slime the victims after a week or so has passed. Mm-hmm. Gun control don't save lives. Senator Eben was the one who introduced the magazine bill. And Van Cleve said, "D.C. has those 10-round restrictions and eight times the murder rate of Northern Virginia, which has no limits on magazine size." Yeah. The shooter in Virginia, of course, had no problem obtaining whatever weapon he wanted. But he was being crafty about it. He could not have accomplished what he wanted to accomplish without access to a suppressor. Oh, by the way, the gun fiends, they say we need suppressors to protect the shooter's hearing. Well, it doesn't seem that the shooter from Virginia Tech has, or not Virginia Tech, from Virginia Beach, has much to worry about in the way of his hearing. But the gun freaks would rather protect the shooter's hearing than protect the people the shooter is shooting at. And, of course, the usual disclaimer applies. there were people, plenty of people out on social media to be found saying, if only them people had the ability to carry guns themselves in them public buildings, this probably would not have happened. Utterly oblivious to the meaning of the word ambush. Yeah. Or the fact that a 9mm pistol firing around through a suppressor doesn't even sound like pistol fire anymore. Note coming in from Monique. If Trump were to depart this mortal world, let's just say the South never forgets with the monuments and statues. We ain't seen nothing yet that I bet his MAGA cult Trumpansies would do. Ugh. True enough. You know what's going to really suck? Is when the Congress moves to name an aircraft carrier after him. Yeah. That's going to be real nasty. And so, a reminder, a challenge on the table, Bruce's Memorial Challenge for the first of the month. Charlene in Rhode Island, not Connecticut. I mean, they're kind of right there by each other, but that's not an excuse. Charlene in Rhode Island has made a challenge within a challenge. If we can get $50 people to answer to the tune of $50, she will match it and add in another 25. And that's hugely important for the beginning of the month, especially in light of the fact that it's never good to leave a challenge on the table. So please, 5 at 10, 10 at 5, 10 at, yeah, you get the idea. And we'll be in considerably better shape, and we'll only need another $75 to complete the challenge. Please. Please. Okay. And thank you very kindly to Charlene and to Ralphs and to Laborman and our anonymous other contributor. Thank you very kindly indeed. Let's see. Checking back in the mail. I'm waiting to hear from Steve Trash. James in Illinois, subject line, now's not the time. Rinse and repeat. And the rinse and repeat is, blood. Serious question about silencers, suppressors, coming from Scott in San Diego. What conceivable valid reason do the gun nuts in these 26 various states where they're legal? Oh, there's Steve. Hold on. Right on time. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, my buddy of long standing, Steve Trash, magician, entertainer, rockin' eco-hero, friend of the ability of planet Earth to sustain human life, songwriter, performer. He's just too many things to mention. But there's one more thing well worth the mentioning, and that nationwide, on June the 10th, Steve will premiere a new program, public television program, that I know for a fact he's been working on for a long, long time. And Steve is keeping himself really busy. There's a lot that goes into this kind of stuff. So I'm really grateful to have him pop by the program. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I am really, really great, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
It is an absolute pleasure. And I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. So, I mean, are you exhausted? I mean, it takes a lot to put this kind of stuff together.
Well, yes. Yeah, well, you know media. You know how it is. And last year, almost exactly this time, I walked into – well, no, that's not true. It was spring, and I walked into the Alabama Public Television corporate offices. They had been blowing me off for like 5 months, right? So I'm assuming that this is going to be just another blow-off meeting, you know, because they postponed it 4 times, right? So I get in there, and I'm the entire executive board is there. So I walk in completely convinced that this is going to be a terrible pitch, and they're going to say no. So I just lay it, I throw it down. Like, I walk in and I say, I got 7 minutes. I'm going to give you my pitch. You either like it or you don't like it. And it was a microphone drop. They loved it. And they said, let's do a kids science show. And I said, first of all, what? And then second of all, okay.
Beautiful. You absolutely weren't expecting either of them. Do you have any idea, and this is calls for speculation, and I apologize for that. Is it just the wonderfulness that is Steve Trash, or why did they suddenly realize that they needed one? That they, you know, not just wanted, but needed a kids science program.
Yeah, it's even more kismet than that. Okay, so for all of your listeners, I swear to you, do you remember the old sculptor's tale about a sculptor chipping away, and you just keep hitting the rock, right? And it's the thousand different strokes that eventually breaks the rock, right? So if you don't see your rock even starting to crack, I personally would say just stay with it. And here's the reason why. About 24 years ago, Alabama Public Television had me down to Birmingham for a live event that they had. It was no big deal. It's just my normal gig. I do shows, teach kids about ecology, recycling, the environment. I'm hilarious if you're 9 years old. And they had me. The mall, there were, you know, kids wanting autographs and stuff. And you know what? 3 of the board members of Alabama Public Television weren't board members then, but they are now. And they stood up and they said,
wait a minute. Are you saying that 3 Alabama Public Television board members were in the audience that day?
Yeah. No. They were working. They were low-level people working. Working an event and making it happen, and then they worked their way up the food chain, and now they're at the top of the food chain, and they said, we're down. Whatever Steve Trash wants to do, let's make it happen. We love this science thing. Because actually what I initially pitched them was I did a really old school, almost Texaco theater kind of magic show. And it was just straight magic tricks. Okay, as straight as I ever get. It always has an eco theme. I don't get away from that. That's just what I like to do. But it was really more just straight out magic tricks. I had also done a pilot, which meant that I was really good magic tricks. It's fun, it's fast. And I would say, now that's magic. Magic is creating the illusion that you can defy the laws of nature. But it's not science. Science is very different. Science is the study of how the natural world works. They may look kind of similar, right? But they're really different things. We're going to explore what science is. Here's a cool magic trick. Now let's go explore science and what that's about. Because so basically, magic has gone through 3 phases in history. First, the original magicians, honestly, we humans thought that they were real. They were the high priests, and they were the priestesses. They were the soothsayers, right? People thought that the phenomena that they were seeing was real. And then we went through this period starting probably in, I'm going to say, the 18th century, mid-1700s, where science became an actual thing, you know, Sir Isaac Newton. And what happened is magicians then began to take on the mantle
of, well, this is scientific phenomena. Well, they were doing magic tricks, right, incorporating science. Now we're in the third epoch, if you will, and this is where we know for a fact that science, you can't defy the laws of nature, that you can't do it. And so the magician is creating this fun illusion just for entertainment and joy, and it's a really different thing than science actually is.
And maybe the best way, or a good way to sort of visualize that is the difference between, and it's amazing the even in this era, the number of times I see people confusing the words astronomy and astrology.
Yeah.
So you're working the science side of the street, but you're using the fun of magic to sort of ease into it. I mean, do you see yourself as filling a gap, or are you expanding on what you hope they're already getting, kids?
Part of the battle that I have fought, that's a really, really perceptive question. And part of the battle that I have fought since I started my career, because I started more than 30 years ago. I came up with the concept of Steve Trash, and I've pretty much just been beating a dead horse for 30 years. You know, I was even had a friend who was a magician, and he admitted to me the other day, he said, you know, 30 years ago, when you started on this whole eco-recycle thing, I'm going to be honest, I thought you were a little bit of a quack, you know? But now he goes, I get it. You were just ahead of the curve. And I said, oh, well, thanks. Never really thought of myself as a quack, but, I appreciate the compliment. And I do actually feel that there is a space open right now. If you look, Mr. Rogers is gone. He's been gone 50 years. This was his anniversary of starting. I just read his biography. And the value of Mr. Rogers is, Mr. Rogers was about kindness and empathy. That's what Mr. Rogers was about. And if you look around, even someone like Bill Nye, the science guy, doesn't do children anymore, right? He's not interested. He wants to talk to the people that now have children. They were his kids back in the 90s. And in my opinion, there is a space for a person that can step up and talk about science and can at the same time talk about being a decent human being. Way, way back in 96, because I was really wrestling with this whole green movement thing, because I started in somewhere around 84 professionally, and I was trying to figure out, I don't understand why sometimes people that love the planet will treat other people badly, right?
Sure.
And I came up with this concept that was really, really actually simple, is that to be a decent human being, you have to respect yourself, you have to respect others, and you have to respect the environment. It's you can't separate those pieces. It's those pieces. It's almost like a pinwheel, really, but it's, you know, just three little legs, you know, respect yourself, others, and the environment. And it's been exactly the same message that I've had since I started my career. So it gives me the ability, in the middle of a science show, it even gives me the ability to do these things I call Steve Trash Says. And for like 60 seconds, I just talk about the value of being trustworthy, how to make friends, not stealing, tell the truth, just simple stuff that I'm afraid children don't get often enough. And if they are getting it, they need someone out there in the public realm that is supporting what their mom or their dad or their grandma or their grandpa or whoever they look up to is saying. So I'm trying to support those things that the positive parental units are saying.
That makes eminently good sense, Stephen. Well, no, it really does. And so I have to ask, does this also come, yeah, you've been doing it for a long, long time. I will say that I never thought you a crackpot or anything like that. I recognize the value of what you're up to. And by the way, you just got fan mail. The subject line just says, Steve, And Jenny writes, say hi to Steve for me, and I hope to see him again at the Wisconsin State Fair. So
you tell her I will hug her neck when I see her. That'll be great. Because I am at the Wisconsin State Fair again this year.
Oh, awesome. I hear it's a great time.
Really good.
Fried cheese curds as far as the eye can see.
and they're good, too.
Oh, they got to – see, I've learned they got to squeak. They're only good when they squeak. But what I was going to say is that you've been working on this issue for as long as you have, and you've neither wavered nor flagged. But you know, we've got real science that happened last November, or October, November, that says that we have reached a tipping point on this planet. And so I guess what I'm asking here is, knowing what we know from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change about what we have to do for this planet in the next 11 years, does that bring a greater sense of urgency to what you're trying to accomplish here?
No, not for me, because my personal feeling is whenever I feel those sort of, oh, my God, this is a clear and present danger emergency, I need to panic. No one ever makes good decisions in the middle of panicking. And so what I try to do is I take a really long step backwards. I mean, like, literally, I visualize myself in outer space looking back at the planet. And one, I know that regardless of us human beings, life will go on the planet. Two, I'm just simply going to continue my work trying to get kids to what I call the trickle-up effect, teach their children well, if you will, to quote Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, that there are basically two principles that the Earth works by. One is it doesn't make pollution. All waste in nature is food. That's one. And the second is it's always sustainable. It's renewable. It renews its own energy. It renews its own power. It renews its own air, its own water, its own land. And we've got to align the way we use resources with those two principles, no pollution and renewability. Because I'm afraid people don't make good decisions when they're in panic mode. So it doesn't really add any sense of urgency. I've never really been good at sprinting. I'm a long hauler, so I just keep my message as calm as possible, try to base it in really, really, really good, clear science. And one of my roles, I mean, I know that you're a very, very politically active and outspoken person, but my role is as an educator. And so I really many times steer clear. Obviously, I read and obviously I have an opinion, but I try to keep my own personal opinions out, because what I'm trying to do is win hearts and minds for great environmental science. And in my idea, everything is environmental science, you know, because there is nothing outside.
There is no planet B.
Yeah, there is none. Yeah.
So you you know what I do and the things that affect us environmentally here in Central Appalachia. And but by the same token, I would never presume to be able to get that kind of a message at that kind of granular detail through to a 9-year-old. So, I mean, what is the target audience? I mean, you've mentioned 9-year-olds, but what is your target audience for the new program?
Well, we based all of this show, since it is PBS, we based it on curriculum for 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. However, because it is both broadcast and mobile, because if you have a smart television, we will be on your smart TV. Chromecast. We're on Apple TV. We're on YouTube. So I know that my audience won't just principally be those kids that we've programmed the actual curriculum for. So we put in, but what I would love to happen is have grandmas and grandpas and moms and dads sitting down watching and laughing and learning. I'll give you a really good example. Okay, there are things that I did not know when we started this project, because I'm a lifelong learner. I don't claim really to know much of anything. I claim to be, I love science, and I love the thing about science that, oh, when we know something new, we have better information, we will update it for you. And so we don't claim to have a lock on truth, right? We claim to have a lock on, this is how we best understand how the natural world works. So as an example, I didn't know anything about riparian zones, right? Riparian zones are basically the sort of vegetative space at the edge of water, okay? You can put those vegetative spaces around ponds, or you can put them around streams or rivers, and they have enormously positive environmental impacts. I mean, they create habitat. I mean, my brother's a hydrologist, so I called him about it. He lives in Oregon, and he goes, yeah, the riparian zones, he said, literally, you've got salmon that if they don't have these shaded riparian zones, the water literally gets too hot for them, and they can't live. So it's healthy all the way around. Didn't know that. I figure, though, if you share that in a fun and funny way, mom and dad might just sort of kind of sit back and think, well, it wouldn't take that much for us to put some cattails around that cattle pond out there, and we could plant a couple of trees, and that'd be kind of nice, wouldn't it? It'd be good for the water, it'd be good for the cows, and that's what I want to do. I want to sneak in the back door of your mind and let you figure it out for yourself.
That's absolutely beautiful, because I was actually in, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that we, for some reason or another, the first Saturday in June in Central Appalachia, it never rains. It's always a perfect day. And this first Saturday in June was no different. And I was down around a little, one of those little riparian areas, and I smelled, and I bent, and lo and behold, mint loves to grow in those kinds of areas. And
yes, it does.
Oh, and you know, when you crush those mint leaves, that aroma will just carry you away. And mm-hmm. there's so much, you know, and probably human life started in those self same areas, Steve. I mean, you know, up out of the ooze and all of that. Let me ask you. So, do you already have a bunch of shows in the can? Is there a full season yet, or are you still shooting?
Nope. We have my promise to Alabama Public Television was that I would deliver 10 30-minute episodes. Actually, as you know, they're not really 30; they're 26 minutes and 45 seconds. But my promise was that I would deliver 10 full episodes, and they bought a contract for 5 years. So they will run those for 10 weeks, and then they will start it in rotation. Each, now, I don't know about West Virginia, but every PBS station, every affiliate, they program their own work themselves. It's completely up to them. So I may or I may not be on your local affiliate. Of course, I hope I am. But if I'm not, you can always find me on YouTube or any of the smart TVs, like I said. But when we initially started, they said go. Like I said, I walked out of the meeting. I'm rarely stunned or speechless. I mean, I can jabber. Even if I don't know what's going on, I can jabber, right? But I was literally speechless. And I walk out to my van, and I texted my wife, and I said, you're not going to believe this. But they said, yeah. They want the show, because, I mean, look, I live in the world of show business, Bob, and you're going to pitch 20 or 30 times and get no's every time, and you're going to get a one. Yeah, it's probably going to be like a small project, right? So I this is not exaggeration. I totally expected them to say no, and when they said yes, first of all, I was excited because they got it, you know, air quotes. They got what I was trying to do, bring some excitement to STEM, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, or that's STEAM nowadays, and present it in a fun and funny way. And the intersection was, we draw them in because they want to come watch some cool magic tricks, and they come in because of the ballyhoo of the magic, and they stay with science.
And therefore, in the long run, it's kind of like winning, isn't it? So you've got these. And you know, I'm terrible sometimes. What is the title, for heaven's sakes?
Yeah, well, it's sort of morphed for a little while, but it is officially called Steve Trash Science. Now, I know that sounds a little kooky, but my legal bill negotiating the contract with public television was over $10,000. And at some point, my attorney, who's one of those LA attorneys, she was wonderful, by the way. It could have been a lot more money. She said, put your name in it. Just put your name in it because this is going to be such a big deal. Your name needs to be in the title. So we call it Steve Trash Science. So here's what makes up Steve Trash Science, okay? I am a huge fan of sketchy comedy like Monty Python,
sure.
Benny Hill. But I love that sketchy comedy stuff. In fact, I've even shot a couple of pilots that really never went anywhere. But that, I enjoy doing that kind of stuff. So what we did is we put this together almost like as a magazine, okay? So at the top of the 30-minute show, you get to see a great magic trick, really fast, really bang, really head-scratching, okay? And then part one of Steve Trash Science, we take a topic like robots or plants or biomes or soil. Then we go into kid jokes. And I have a puppet friend named Nelson, and he rattles off some hilariously corny kid jokes. And then we go to the Steve Trash Says thing, which is just simply me talking about character, what it's like to be a real human being, you know, just reinforcing what moms and dads are doing. Then we also found that my outtakes, because I flub so often, and my crew, I have a crew of like 6 or 7 people, so we have a good time. I don't like a set where everybody's peeved, right? I don't like that. I don't like people being nervous and, you know, on edge. I like a fun set. You got to work hard, but I like a fun set. So there are tons of great outtakes. So we stick those in there. Then there are some music videos. I write the songs. I go down. I live near the Muscle Shoals area. There are tons of great recording studios, great artists. You call them, literally, they'll show up, play guitar. I mean, Kelvin Holly, the most extraordinary guitarist. Well, he was just playing with Billy Ray Cyrus the other night on, you know, one of the big TV shows. Well, Kelvin comes down all the time and plays and records these songs with me. So music videos. Then we've got part two, which is more science, and it's a totally different thing. So let's say the first one was on pollinators. The part one was on pollinators. Then we completely changed gears, and part two of science is going to be about your digital footprint, online safety for kids. Kids don't realize this, but there is a trail. Every website you go to, every comment you make, they think they're doing it anonymously, but that's not true. It's called a digital footprint. So we sort of drill down into that. And then finally, as I said, I'm a Benny Hill fan. I love the little vignettes that Benny Hill used to do, and he would do them in fast motion to Boots Randolph's. Do you remember that
yes.
song, Boots Randolph's?
Yes. I can't remember the title, but...
Yes, Yakety Yak.
Yes.
Yeah. And so we do a couple of sort of physical comedy things. I promise. Grown-ups will even laugh. They're really funny.
So how has this? How does this impact what you do most of the time, that is the touring and the Wisconsin State Fairs and the Ohio State Fair, are you going to continue with both?
Oh, for sure. Because I've wanted to do both most of my career. I did have a regional Southeastern show back in the 90s, but it was small time. It was just training, really, for this. And as you know, because we stay in touch, most of the writing, most of the creating for this show had to take place while I was touring. So, for instance, I was at the Minnesota State Fair this year, okay? I was there for a week. Well, I would get up at 3 in the morning and write from usually around 3 to about 7 or 7:30. I would drive over to the fairgrounds because it's a very busy fair. So you have to get there early. I would get my parking space. I would go into my dressing room. I would then write from, say, 8:30 until my first show around 11. So I was getting in 6, 7, 8 hours of writing work before I actually began, you know, again, air quotes, my job, you know, doing 3 shows a day. And then, you know, if I have another gig, I drive down the road to the next place to do it all over again. I mean, truthfully, it's the hardest I've ever worked. And I have the full satisfaction of knowing that on this particular project, honest to God, if people don't like it, they can just stick it in their ear because I gave it my best effort.
Dadgummit, absolutely right. What is it? What is it about those early hours of the morning that? Because you know, so many people who write say that you know that's when they get stuff done. Why does that work for you that way?
I think partially in my case, it's my job nowadays is putting out fires. I have really good help. I'm an executive assistant, and Pam knows that I don't do dates well. Pam knows that I don't do calendars well, and so she has one job. Make sure Steve is at the right place. I mean, she texted me. She said, remember, you got Bob this evening. I was like, oh, thank you, right? So the thing that I do, honestly, if you just want to describe my whole job, it's simple. I just make stuff up.
Not a bad way to get through this little journey on the planet, I'd say. But
yep,
I think you're doing a lot more than just making stuff. I mean, I've long said that probably the creative life is one of the hardest lives on the planet.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can, and I'm not trying to diminish any other form of work, but in creativity, if it doesn't happen in you, it can't get out to the rest of the world. And that's a tremendous amount of pressure to put on oneself. There are other ways of keeping the lights on. But for those people like you who are driven to it, there really isn't. And so through the course of this creative course that you've described, this creative process, give people an idea. You know, you mentioned that, what is it, 26 minutes and 45 seconds?
Yep.
How many hours or days or weeks goes into those 26 minutes and 45 seconds?
That's a really brilliant question. So obviously you're talking about 5 hours of material, right? That's the full season is 5 hours. I know just editing, we were well over 500 hours of editing. I know we were well over 800 hours of writing, performing. Let's see, we shot it in about 3 weeks. We shot it out in about 3 weeks, and we do 8-hour days. Because call is 7:30, so we do 8-hour days because I get tired and, you know, I'm no good on camera. So it's somewhere in the thousands. But, you know, I would say I have both a blessing and a curse, and it's this. I was really early on, I thought I had something to say. And I thought that I had some talent. I mean, I was not a good magician. You and I spent a good bit of time together on the theatrical stage. And I knew that I had a little talent there. And I knew even more than that, I loved it. And so what I did is I tried to marry that little bit of talent that I had with something that I needed to be said. I just thought it needed to be said, and I just simply don't. Yeah, you know, the thing is, Bob, I just don't give up, right? I've lived in my van. I've been to these conferences where I couldn't afford to stay in the hotel, so I've got this trade show booth set up, and I'm trying to sell shows and let you do this and does that, and I sneak out to my van and I sleep in my van because I don't have the $900 to pay for my hotel. You just, you know, you do what you got to do.
Well, you do, and I know a little bit about that over on this end too, because the grassroots work we do in D.C. We go to D.C. and we eat a lot of beans while we're in D.C. Rice and beans. you know, all in the name of making this place where I am and a little bit better. Let's talk for a minute. You mentioned call and your shooting schedule. Are you shooting in a studio or on location?
Actually, I'm very lucky. Lawrence, the town we both grew up, Lawrence, Alabama, has a small green screen studio, and the executive director, Giles McDaniel, called me when it came open and came available. And he said, "Would you come look at this? Because I think there might be something here." And I walked in, and I was like, "Giles, are you kidding me? I can totally make a television show in this space." So it's a green screen space because I built this show last year. Public television did some studies and found that more children are actually watching content on their digital devices, on their mobile devices, than they actually watch on television, on a conventional TV. So we designed the picture. If you will, when you are thinking of what the audience sees, you must always see a tiny rectangle in your mind. So I even have sketches of what the show would look like as we're shooting, and I would frame it out, and I would tell the director of photography, "Now look, this is. Remember, this is going to be the size of someone's cell phone. So shoot with that in mind." Now, the luxury of a green screen means that I can be so tiny that I'm in a little kid's bowl of cereal, right? Or I can be in the pocket of a giraffe wearing a T-shirt, right? Or you can put me anywhere because it's green screen. And letters that spell out words, because I'm dyslexic. So I really, really, really want you, if you say a word that maybe I don't know, I want to see that word, right? So that's what we do. We put the word up there, or we put the definition, you know, with those, if I'm saying it or I'm showing you what it means. So visually, it's a really, really interesting thing. And always we had in mind, okay, remember, this thing's going to be like 3.5 or 4 inches across and 2.5, 3 inches tall. So keep that in mind as you're shooting.
And all of these are things that you could never even dream of accomplishing in front of a live audience.
No, and that's the difference. So the difference in the two things, I would say, one is your reach. They know for a fact the most famous magician of the 20th century was Harry Houdini, and that includes David Copperfield. The most famous magician was Harry Houdini, and more people saw Doug Henning on his 1976 first magic special, I guess 75 magic special. More people saw him on that one special than saw Harry Houdini in his entire career, right? So the numbers are different if you are doing digital content. Do I love live? Oh, you bet. I love the ability to sing some mess up. I love just meeting an audience and doing my thing. But your impact can be greater. And the truth is, I've always wanted to make something. I wanted whatever it was I had to say, I wanted that to live on if I couldn't be living to live on, right? So the work can live. The words that I say, the things that I do can live on in digital form. That's honestly why I got up at 3 o'clock and would work until I needed to do a show and then work some more and then work some more until I fell asleep at my computers, because I simply felt driven to get this out to the world. And if it blows up, I'm going to be super excited. And if it doesn't, I'm totally cool with that, because I made what I set out to make.
Well, I'm wagering on the "it blows up" side of things. I think this is no, because you know, you had the previous video project. It was brilliant. Yes. And this, yes, you know, this has been, this isn't an isolated event for you. This is something that has been, well, it's like J.R.R. Tolkien said about the Lord of the Rings, the tale grew in the telling. So it has a flavor of that. I do remember, though, in eons back, you also had a damn good photographic eye. So that leads me to wonder, and I know you've got your standalone website. Is there going to be an accompanying website for the whole program?
Right now, no. But in the future, yeah. In fact, we even have our designs. If we can, because of course we're already working on season two. Season one is in the can. We're working on season two. But what we'd really like to do is build some interactive games, because the way into kids' hearts is through gaming. right? Because we are, look at puppies. Puppies play. Look at children. If you leave them to their own devices, they play. And what is gaming? It is play. So we're looking at season two having more ways to reach you. Because, you know, the only reason I'm a musician, Bob, is because I wanted a way, well, I love music. You know, I love guitars. I love cigar box guitars. I just wanted another way to reach people. Some people don't like magic tricks, right? Some people like music. I'm like, well, I'll write some songs about Garbage Mountain, right? Or I'll about everything being connected, you know? And I'm always looking for what's the way that I can get in someone's heart and mind, regardless of what I like, regardless of what I'm into, how can I reach you? How do I walk in your footsteps and have your mind, because these ideas that I want to share with you are really important, in my opinion, they're really important for the survival of human civilization. And I'd like to share them in a positive and uplifting way and say, hey guys, let's go this way. Come on.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, then one of the things that you know, the grown-ups worry about the kids is the fact that they the amount of time they spend on their mobile devices. So
yeah,
you're going to get into their phones and their tablets and whatnot. But everything you're talking about comes from an abiding love of the natural world. Isn't it a little bit of a conundrum to say, on the one hand, you're saying, I'm glad you're watching this. How do you tell them, okay, now put me down and go outside?
I can't. That's a parent's responsibility. And in some ways I can. It's been, and that's a really, really perceptive question. I have some friends here that have some land set aside, Cane Creek, and there are a number of different outdoor activity folks that I know, and I've always been a little sort of envious of what they do, because the reason I love the outdoors is because as a kid, I spent a lot of time outdoors.
Right.
But I will just take my own personal passion, which is theater and which is magic and science, and do a show to excite you about the ideas. You'd be hard pressed to say that Walden, which was a book, would keep you indoors, right?
Right.
The idea is to excite you about that outdoor thing, and then you go participate. Because my inroad to science is, oh my God, look how exciting the freaking world is. It's literally full of magic. I mean, can you believe the shape of this bug? Can you believe how pollination works? Can you believe that water evaporates and then it turns into, it gets heavy, it grabs around little bitty tiny particles in the sky, right? You can't see them. And then they grab it and then it gets heavy and then it falls back to the ground. That's freaking magic. Don't you want to be a part of that? Don't you want to go get muddy? Don't you want to get out in it? Now, some people won't, but a lot of people will. In my case, if I just show them my excitement for it, I think it's possible they will find a way to get out in it.
As the program progresses past the first season, I'm sure you're going to have input from some of your viewers. Do you have any plans on addressing the kinds of questions that kids will raise to you?
Oh, sure. Well, most of the time they ask it live or Instagram, because I'm pretty active on Instagram. I'm not on Snapchat, but that's only because I have a limited number of hours a day. But I'm on Instagram. I'm all over Facebook. I have a really extensive YouTube page. And so if your listeners are into that sort of thing, they can find me on YouTube. All you have to do is a quick search for Steve Trash. Or Steve Trash Science, and man, I'll pop up right at the top. So most of the time, kids do ask those questions either through Instagram or on YouTube. But I'm very interested in those questions. I mean, a kid just asked me a question the other day because we were talking about behind the scenes. We were doing the robot segment, and she said, but wait, that's lying. And I said, well, no, wait a second. When you're making a movie or a video, everyone knows that what they're seeing is not necessarily real. You are telling a story about something that is real. So the bottom line truth of the story is true. But sometimes you have to use actors to pretend that they are actually the people in the story. Or you have to use maybe a fake wall that's not really a house, right? And so I thought that was a really perceptive thing because she really wanted to understand, okay, I know lying is not good. How come you're lying right now? And even as an eight-year-old, she was able to go, oh, I get it. Okay, there are times when you're telling a story like a magician does, and you know that the magician's telling a story. The magician doesn't tell you the truth. It's just for entertainment and fun. But on the other hand, you know the scientist is not lying. The scientist is trying to find the truth and present the truth. Is there bias among scientists? Of course, they're human beings. But I personally know my brother's a scientist, and he finds nothing more pleasurable than poking holes in other people's science. So I think that is a characteristic that may run through a scientist. They just like going, I'm not sure that's accurate. Let's talk about that.
Right. And in furtherance of a greater desire to have a more complete understanding of a given topic. Is there anything, have you experienced anything yet, Steve? Because I just get the sense you probably will at some point, where kids manifest their fears or their misgivings about their natural world?
I get it every once in a while. You do get that from kids. And
I mean, I think about the recent spate of floods and tornadoes and, you know, everything but frogs and locusts. It seems, in the last month.
Yeah, I think you have to simply go to you have to go to Mr. Rogers. If you are in danger and things are scary, look for the helpers, because there are always helpers. And Mr. Rogers was absolutely right about that. Look for the helpers, because there are always helpers. And I think that's the best advice, because remember, children think short term, and we need to be very careful about dealing with the climate issue with children, particularly young children, because they can be sent into panic mode and they don't even know why.
And once you're in panic mode, nothing good happens.
Nothing good happens. No good decisions. And particularly with children, they can make some very poor decisions when they're afraid or when they're excited, you know, at the top of their emotions. So I would say that's the only advice I would give is look for the helpers. There are always helpers around, always.
That's beautiful, you know. It really, really is. And I can't tell you, Steve, how much I continue to admire the work that you do. I see your postings on Facebook. I don't do Snapchat either. I don't think I understand it. but I
we're lying, man.
Yeah,
lying. The great you're lying.
You know, I just chalk it up to I'm a geezer. I'm not supposed to understand it.
Thank you for following my social media stuff. And I'm going to tell you what I do. The reason I consistently do it is I don't think I have a huge impact on social media. But this is the way I look at it is, what do I want to say? What do I think is important to be said? I'm very, very lucky. My father died instantly when I was 14. There was no notice. He had a pulmonary embolism. Bam. The next morning he was gone. And so from the time I was 14, I have been extremely, excruciatingly aware that today could be my last day. And so I work every day, and some days I fail. I'm human. But I work every day to try to make that day, as Coach John Wooden would say, your masterpiece. You try to make that contribution and make it a day that when you are down for your final rest, you think, well, that was a good dadgum day. You know, I spent it well. And so with the social media stuff, I'll wake up and think, all right, this is on my heart and on my mind. And sometimes I can't do anything better than to quote something some smart person said, Abraham Lincoln or Eleanor Roosevelt, or I'm a big fan of Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist monk. And he, you know, he just says things. I'm like, yeah, that registers as true with me. I didn't say it, but it's what I'm feeling, so I'm going to share it.
Well, I, you know, the idea of treating this as it's like the end of the program here every evening. I thank people for sharing their what I refer to as precious finite time on this planet, engaging in this conversation.
Yep.
You don't, you know. The one thing that a long, long, long time ago I figured out, Steve, is the one thing I hated to hear myself say or anyone else is, when I get more time. You can get more money. You can maybe get more love. You will never get more time than what you have, what we have right here in this moment. And I can't help but think that I like to tell myself, and I believe it, that as we go forward in what is a bit of a struggle for the species, that you're making a tremendous positive contribution toward to the W column as opposed to the L. And I thank you a lot, Steve, for joining us this evening. I wish you the very best as this Steve Trash Science debuts and hopefully goes stratospheric. You said the debut date is technically the 10th.
Yeah, technically it rolls out to all of the PBS affiliates because we're distributed for broadcast through the National Educational Telecommunications Association. So we will roll out then. It starts here in Alabama on Saturday the 15th. But I would say to all of your listeners, go to stevetrash.com. The biggest button on the page is Steve Trash Science. Any information you would like to find, you know, what the episodes cover or any of that kind of information, who our sponsors are, things like that, you can get information. Follow my social media because I'll let you know, you know, if we're going to be in West Virginia, because I won't know for another couple of weeks. We won't actually know until they take the feed, because you don't have to, none of the affiliates have to tell us that they're taking the feed. They just, bam, they just do it.
So does a little front end activism help if folks reach out to their public television outlet in the several states and say, "Gosh, I sure hope you're gonna run Steve Trash Science."
Yeah, if you're polite, because like all great industries of people who think they know what they're doing, all of the programmers are pretty good at what they do. But yeah, if you were polite and said, "This looks really interesting, would you consider?" You bet, that would help.
Well, I have a feeling that will happen very politely in several states. So you don't know, so you can't have an affiliate list. I mean, that's not at that button right now.
No, we will. Once it starts rolling out, because once the affiliates start taking the feed, they will then have a list of who's taking the feed, because there are 10 episodes and they basically do it on. I think we're Monday at like 1 o'clock or something. I don't remember, Tuesday maybe, but they roll it out and then the affiliates put it in. Like, I know we're in Toledo, Ohio on like a Thursday afternoon because that's their kid block. And everyone programs very, very differently. We are programmed in Alabama on a Saturday morning. We've got the 10 o'clock Saturday morning slot, which is a killer slot.
Yeah, no, yeah, so. they gave you the gold.
Yeah, they really did. And, you know, I was kind of even considering, because the series is kind of a binge-watchable show, I was considering putting it all up at the same time, but I think I'm going to hold off. But as each episode airs, we will make sure it's all online. So if anybody's interested, they can find it and watch it over. Oh, can I mention one last thing before we
You
go
can do
through?
Anything you want to. It's a regular joint, like W.C. Fields said.
Well, for your viewers, we wanted to make it really sticky for children so they would come back over and over and over again. So I created this thing called Find Pinecone Phil, right? In every episode, I have hidden an image of a pinecone, and his name is Pinecone Phil, or Phil the Pinecone, and he's in the most bizarre, peculiar places. And so I want kids to try to find pine cone fill in every episode. And there's a really nice story about that. My brother and I are a little bit jokesters, and so we started hiding a pine cone years ago.
Aww.
And we're just extending the joke to my public family, if you will.
Oh, that's awesome. That's wonderful. That's the kind of little touch that makes that makes something like this as potentially successful as I hope it will be. Summer is upon us. That's live magic season, I take it. Are you going back on the road soon?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. And we have a lot of work in June. I'm actually doing a live version of Steve Trash Science Live, and I'm hitting a lot of theaters. I'm hitting a lot of state fairs this year. I'll be all over the country.
And including Wisconsin. Are you doing Ohio again?
This year, no. They're taking a year off, and I kind of hate that because I love doing Ohio State Fair.
Well, it would be, we'd love to see you in West Virginia if you could. West Virginia State Fair is not as big as Wisconsin or Ohio, but it's a fun time too.
Yes, I talked to a venue in Charleston. Your performing arts. I can't remember the name.
The Clay Center.
Yes, and she was extremely excited about it. I'm not sure why it never happened, but my suspicion would be we will make it happen in late 19 or 2020.
Oh gosh, I hope it does, because I have three grandkids that I will make dead certain are absolutely, and they'll be all excited, and it'll be a fun little road trip to Charleston.
Sweet. I love it.
All right, Steve Trash, thanks again. Thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck with the kickoff of the program. And hopefully everybody will follow you on social media and help amplify the message. Again, Steve, best of luck, and thanks again.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for all the years of support, Bob. Good luck, man.
All right, take care. Bye now. And that is, let's see here. I got to do a little retweaking here. There we go. That is the one, the only, the inimitable, except no substitutes, Steve Trash. Steve Trash Science premieres on PBS, produced by Alabama Public Television. It goes online on the 10th, and then check your local listings, as the saying goes, to find it in your area. And if you don't find it, and you've got kids or grandkids, or you yourself think you would benefit from the program, politely and nicely, drop them a note and say, gosh, I think it would be a great idea if you ran Steve Trash Science on K or W, whatever the next three letters are, my public television in my state. I know Steve would appreciate it. Heck, I'd appreciate it. The more science that we can get to our kids, without a doubt, the better off we are. So, again, thanks to Steve. And it's going to be a little weird to transition from something as nice and hopeful and upbeat as what Steve's working on to, where we kind of got to go back to. But I will, I've got thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Jude for jumping in on Charlene's challenge within a challenge. That means we've got $40 more to go on that challenge, and then another $75 to go to finish off Bruce's Memorial Challenge for the first broadcast day of the month. And we've got about an hour and 6 minutes to get that done in. And by the way, I apologize for the audio quality. I've been going through Bob's home for Wayward Hardware looking for a new wire. I think that's part of the Skype problem. And there's a short. And so as soon as I find that, I'll get that replaced. Let's see. Anything else? Just checking around the various social media formats. I did get notice during the conversation of a brand new federal court ruling. U.S. District Judge, rather, Trevor N. McFadden, today, and remember, I do believe Trevor N. McFadden is a Trump appointee. He denied a suit by the House of Representatives to suspend financial expenditures for the stupid wall. He claimed that the House of Representatives, had no standing to sue the president for overstepping his power in diverting billions of dollars intended for other purposes to pay for the wall. Yet really, his holding is that one House of Congress cannot sue the president, I guess, absent the other House going along. This is madness, and this will not, this will not end well. Unless, of course, he gets straightened out, Trevor McFadden, by the appellate court. Well, let's check in on Trevor McFadden real quick. Previously, he was a Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Criminal Division of the DOJ. BA from Wheaton College in Illinois. Law degree from the University of Virginia School of Law. And yeah, he was nominated to be a district judge by Donald Trump. He's probably one of those Federalist Society types who checked all the right boxes. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. So, being as how it is Morin Monday, if you've got any particular nominees, you're welcome to share them. Lines are open. The stress line, toll-free, 844, the horn, 844-843-4676, and 304-574-8178, and Skype, Bob Kincaid, horn, all get you right into the program. And we'll be conversing before you know what happened. Let's just check in on a couple of Morans for Morin Monday. Bad day for one of Trump's buddies. While he's over in Engeland, almost tripping. No, really. Almost tripping the Queen of England. Particularly, he wanted to ride with the Queen in her golden coach, just like the royal brides do. I wish I was making this up. It was last summer when he almost tripped the Queen. And, of course, there's a press conference tomorrow where one can expect that he will probably go completely off the rails. Kyle says, so the courts are telling us that Trump will not be subjected to oversight because the Congress doesn't have standing to do their constitutional duty? Sounds to me like shit that happens in dictatorships. Why are we not in the streets by the hundreds of thousands demanding an end to this? It only gets worse from here. Well, Kyle, not to be too much of a cynic or a pessimist, but it's because, well, the cable's still on. I know people hate it when I say that, but it is. And people have, you know, we can't take to the streets because we are lashed to the mast of our debt-ridden lives. Mortgages, car payments, insurance, repairs, medical bills. Those are all things that hang fire if the American people take to the streets. I'm not saying they shouldn't, but it's a fact that that's one of the demotivators for anybody considering the notion. That's not an accident. That's intended. Subject line, suing the Don. James in Illinois says he'll go up the line to the court he thinks he owns. We need to find that out. Wheaton, Illinois is a hotbed of Christian fundamentalism. Oh, yeah. Well, he's in, but McFadden is a D.C. circuit, a D.C. district judge. So he'll go up to the D.C. circuit. And from there, well, just a couple of blocks up the street to the Supreme Court. All right. But the madness that will accompany this Julius Geezer's trip to England is not, today he called the mayor of London a stone-cold loser, even though he was on tape calling Meghan Markle nasty. He denied he said it. And big Trump baby balloon will be deployed in London. Yeah. But what I was saying, it's about one of his advisors. George Nader got busted. Transportation of child pornography. And Nader, of course, was a central go-between in some of the more dodgy so-called negotiations that they engaged in. He was also a key witness, George Nader was, in the Mueller probe. How about that? He was a liaison between Trump supporters, Middle Eastern leaders, and Russians trying to get in touch with the administration to press their issues. He was the key facilitator in the meeting between Eric Prince, of the founder of Blackwater, and relative of Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, a Russian person in the Seychelles back in January of 2017. The Justice Department says he was traveling to the U.S. from Dubai and was, quote, in possession of a cell phone containing visual depictions of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct. This is one of those cases of a dog returneth ever to its, you know, because the Washington Post wrote, Nader was convicted 28 years ago of transporting child pornography, a case in which he received a reduced sentence after influential figures argued privately to the court that he was playing a valuable role in national security affairs, trying to free U.S. hostages then held in Lebanon. If convicted, he's facing 15 to 40 in the big house. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, this is just a public service of the horn here. We're not trying to ruin anybody's dinner in the Mountain Time Zone, but if you've got some Purdue Simply Smart Organics chicken nuggets, chicken tenders, chicken strips. Check the packaging, please. It's been recalled. It was produced on March 21st, shipped to retail locations throughout the country. The establishment code number is ESTP, as in Peter, 369. They've been recalled because I guess they're kind of bony. Purdue Simply Smart Organics breaded chicken breast tenders, gluten-free. Not bone-free, though. 11.2 ounces. 12-ounce plastic trays of Purdue Simply Smart Organics breaded chicken breast nuggets, whole grain. And these things mostly have use-by dates of May the 20th, but that doesn't necessarily mean that people wouldn't still have them in their refrigerators or freezers. So, you know, maybe just check. All right, and we do have one other. You know, when I was talking to Steve, he talked about how important it is to teach children to be decent human beings. Start that stuff early, you've got a fighting chance. And so when I read a story like this, I shake my head and wonder who failed where. There are people who, I guess, become big YouTube stars just by being mean. And they often do so under the guise of being a prankster. Enter Kanghwa Ren, whose username on YouTube is Reset. Capital R, little E, capital S, E, T, Reset. Because European nations are considerably better at this than we are, he has been charged and tried and convicted in Spain and sentenced to 15 months in prison, fined the euro equivalent of about $22,000 by a Spanish court, because, and I don't get it. I don't understand what it is that it makes a person want to be this hateful. But a viewer suggested this prank to him, and he followed through. He took apart some Oreos, scraped off the filling inside, and replaced the filling with toothpaste. Now, this guy had 1 million subscribers on YouTube. He filled the Oreos with toothpaste and then gave the toothpaste-filled Oreos to a homeless man who ate them and got viciously ill. You're not supposed to eat toothpaste. You're not supposed to swallow toothpaste if you can help it. That minty fresh doesn't... No. So he's going to do 15 months in prison because he just couldn't resist the urge to poison a human being. The guilty verdict was based on a finding that he had damaged the homeless man's integrity, moral integrity. He got a 5-year ban from YouTube as part of the sentence. Judge Rosa Aragones said this was not an isolated act. She said it was a clear and unambiguous act of humiliating content. He gave the homeless man the toothpaste-filled Oreos and a 20 euro note. And then at the end of the video, he said, "This will help clean his teeth. I don't think he has cleaned them since he became poor." And because capitalism, the guy also offered the man's daughter $330 if she would not file charges against him. Nonetheless, the guy tells his followers, "Do not believe everything the newspapers say. They're not completely wrong, but they make things up to make people, in this case me, look bad." That's right up there with Trump saying, there's a recording of him calling Meghan Markle nasty.
I never said it.
Yeah. And like I said, we've got a total of $40 plus $75 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge that begins the month of June. And hopefully we will make that before the hour is out. Let's run over to the phones and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Bob. It's Monday. It's been a productive Monday here at Shea Guru. And hopefully the unfold just as usefully.
Well, we're still having that low volume issue with Skype here. Let me tweak. No, that's
hello,
yeah.
I must
okay,
be
yeah,
going.
That's it's not you, it's me.
Okay. Well, sometimes it's me, you know? And I'm going to try to make this a quickie, but I just had a thought. You were looking for moron nominations. Well, first of all, do you know why, Bob, Mr. Science here, do you know why we're not supposed to swallow toothpaste?
It's got something nasty in it. I know.
Fluoride.
Yeah.
Fluoride is
fluoride
supposedly...
Fluoride mandrake. Fluoride mandrake in little children's ice cream.
Fluoride is supposedly good for topical application to your toothers. But you spit it out. You don't swallow it because it can harm you if you ingest it. And whoever that clown was, somebody needs to set him down and talk some sense to him. Not like it's going to matter, but I mean, how fucking stupid and awful you have to be to do something like that. I mean, it's a rhetorical question because we know how stupid and horrible you have to be.
Well, no, I think it's probably something that could be properly the subject of a psychological inquiry. Insofar as what it, you know, there's a lot of research about the impacts of social media and the internet on human behavior. And so when you mix in the possibility of making a bunch of money with a desire for fame, you get this.
Well, and let me tell you, I mean, you probably...
And mob behavior into the bargain.
We've never met, but just from our conversations, you probably understand that I have a fairly healthy sense of humor or the absurd. And if you really got to know me and spent time with me, you know that I appreciate a good practical joke, okay? But there's a vast quantity of difference between putting toothpaste in hollowed-out Oreos and feeding them to some poor, unsuspecting schlub who's already got troubles enough, you know, and then to get yucks from it. You know,
and you know, it doesn't. It's not entirely an internet phenomenon, but I remember because I worked on it a lot of years ago. There was this redneck chief of police in the county seat of Clay County here in West Virginia. The county seat is Clay, and there was an old drunk, more or less homeless. And the police chief knew that he hid his bottle of wine down by the Elk River behind one of the buildings in town. It's just, you know, it's one of those don't blink or you'll miss it kind of towns. Incidentally, the woman who was recently sentenced to prison for committing FEMA fraud, who initially became famous for describing Michelle Obama as a ape in heels, and he came from the same place. It's a mean place. But he knew, the police chief knew where the homeless drunk guy hid his bottle. And so he went and filled it with castor oil.
Oh, God.
And he drank it, and he died.
Yeah, because castor oil comes from castor beans, which is where ricin comes from.
Yes.
Because it's a fucking poison.
Yes. And that, you know, that's in the 80s. That's pre-internet.
Yeah.
But the problem is you take something, you take human willingness to do that kind of evil, you know, the boys on the force thought it'd be funny to watch him shit himself.
Did anything happen to the guy? I mean,
no.
This guy is supposedly law enforcement.
No.
Makes you kind of wish there were an afterlife.
Because they argued that he was old and sick anyway. And so, you know, really, the castor oil didn't really kill him. He was going to die anyway. Kind of like what Attorney General William Barr says. Everyone dies.
Yeah. Well, go right ahead, Mr. Barr. Age before beauty.
But you take impulses like that. If that had happened in the internet age, millions of people in this country and around the world would ho ho ho, and wouldn't have quit laughing until the news got out that he died.
Well, wasn't it a couple of years ago that some asshat would engage street people in what was laughingly referred to as bum fights?
And then that's a thing.
Video it and post it online. I mean, this is the mentality of a chunk of the population. And it's disgusting, but it's also frightening. I mean, yeah, human beings, I guess, at their very worst, are capable of nearly anything. But capability it's not like an insistence that you must engage in your base activities. I mean, and I'm sure some of these people are fine church-going folks.
But there's
Lord Jesus.
Oh, yes, of course they do. But, you know, that was supposedly a practical joke or a prank.
Well, that's why I use the term practical joke, Bob, because there's a big difference between slipping an inflated whoopee cushion onto the seat of someone about to sit down, and old Fred farted, you know, and this sort of stuff, feeding toothpaste to a poor a street person, or putting castor oil in the poor wino's bottle and it kills him. I mean, Jesus.
But it comes from, that kind of thing comes from a place of just plain old-fashioned meanness, Scott. And it's not limited to practical jokes. A lawsuit's been filed in Oklahoma in federal court about a young man, 21 years old, named Joshua Englund. He spent a week in a prison in Oklahoma, the last week of his life. And he spent that week doubled over in pain, sweating profusely, maybe even hallucinating. And over 7 days, the last seven of his existence, he begged prison officials for medical attention. 5 times. They never summoned a doctor. They did at one point give him a dose of Pepto-Bismol. his appendix ruptured, and he died. They belittled him. They told him he was malingering, that he was lying, that he was faking it. And, of course, officials in Oklahoma declined comment. Jessica Brown, a spokesperson for the Oklahoma Department of Corrections, said, "The plaintiff has sent this matter to the courts, which is where information should be exchanged."
Translation, nothing will happen.
Yeah, well, translation, we're going to try to cover our asses. And if we have to, we'll let his mother settle with the insurance company. But we're going to try to make sure that we get to go on doing this kind of thing. You know, there's a mean-spiritedness, and again, this is one of those moments, Scott, where you say, "Hey, we need to pay attention here. This isn't something that we got just because Trump became president. This has been present for a while, maybe forever in the American psyche." But there is a streak of just plain gut-level meanness. They only sent for an ambulance when they saw him lying on the day room floor in May of 2018. And by the time the EMS crew got there, all they did was show up and go, "He's dead, Jim."
Yeah, I don't think meanness is too polite a word. It's a homicidal mindset. Maybe there wasn't intention to do permanent, you know, fatal harm. But if the end result is the death of someone, some responsibility must be attached to such behavior. I mean, I guess in a perfect world, people like that would get their just reward, but we're not in that, obviously not in that world. I don't mean to digress, but the other day, my Facebook pal, Phil Proctor, who's one of the last two surviving members of Firesign Theater, posted something, and I wish I had it at hand to send to you, and I will once I find it again. He posted something, and I'm wondering if you've ever heard of this, because I hadn't, and maybe it was in the news and I missed it. But apparently when Trump was being sent to military school because he was incorrigible and uncontrollable, he took some kind of IQ test or a standardized test, which at that age, whatever age it was, it supposedly showed that he had an IQ in his early teens, of 70, which is just above idiot, if I remember my IQ scale.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the Moran neighborhood.
Yeah, speaking of Moran Monday. And is this verifiable? I wish I had the source.
No, it's not, because one of the things that Trump did was he had Michael Cohen threaten everybody who ever knew anything about his scholastic abilities with all manner of hell and damnation and legal process should any of that shit ever get out.
Well, and like he did with his New York doctor, probably sent his agents to collect the files, is more likely.
Meanwhile, Joshua Englund was mentally slow, and he was doing 343 days in prison for fourth-degree arson and stealing oil.
And where was this again? Oklahoma?
Yeah, and it turned out to be a death sentence in Oklahoma.
Jesus. Well, getting back to Moran Monday and nominations for Morans, I don't know that this is a bona fide nomination. And this is one of those times where I really wish that you had access to HBO, because tonight at 9 Eastern, the fifth and final episode of the miniseries Chernobyl is going to air. And this is where the shit hits the fan, supposedly, from what I've been told. All through the series, and it's probably unfair to talk about it, you not having seen it, but first of all, when Chernobyl happened in April of 86, the Soviet officials, every opportunity they had to minimize the event, they took those opportunities. It was the ultimate cover your ass, CYA exercise. And only after it began to be shown to them by scientists the drastic situation that they were facing did they begin a little bit to behave responsibly. But a thread running through it, through the series, is say nothing, show nothing, admit nothing, cover up, and minimize, okay? To the point that even the scientists who wanted to make the world aware, the rest of the world aware of the severity of Chernobyl to the rest of the world, who would be affected by it to some degree or another, they were shadowed by KGB operatives to put the thumb on these scientists and other citizens who wanted somehow to get the word out. And the point is made by one of the characters that the watchers were also being watched and by other KGB operatives. And one would assume that the watchers of the watchers were also being tailed. And the key dynamic in that system was everybody keeps everybody else, in air quotes, honest. Okay? So I think that Putin, who was in East Germany in the mid-80s as a young man, he's only about 2 years older than me, probably had no hand in anything connected to Chernobyl. But all along, I've kind of waited for his name or someone like him, someone based on him, to show up in the narrative, because he must think that we're morons in his heart of hearts. I mean, he certainly knows that Trump is a moron, or at least influenceable. Somehow he's got the goods on him about something and is pulling his strings whenever he can. I mean, the fucking Russians interfered and would have done more if they could have done more to interfere in the 2016 election. And, you know, we're being played as chumps in his mind.
As our buddy Reverbo described it, well chumped.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's anyway, anybody who does have access to HBO, and I hope the series shows up on Netflix or Amazon Prime so you can eventually see it, because it's a very well-done program. Anyone who does have current access to HBO should catch up on the first four episodes and then the finale, like On Demand, HBO Go, or the reruns on HBO. Because as depressing as it was, it's been a quite well-done series. And I think there are lessons to be learned, not just in the obvious, in the realm of nuclear power, but also in the realm of how Russians of that era, and maybe to some extent today's world, continue to operate. They are our adversary, you know, and it's something that we forget at our own peril. And like I said, that's not really why I called, but I mean, you did ask for more on nominations.
Sure.
I think America, by and large, except for people who have a few viable brain cells to bang together are morons, are easily swayed and easily played. You know?
I think you're right. And by the way, Les just wrote in and said, I believe sadistic is the word Scott is looking for. In positions of authority, it tends to attract and produce sadistic assholes. There was a movie made about it starring Forrest Whitaker called The Experiment.
And, I don't remember that.
And you know, I think Les is right, because Les is more right.
That one about the Stanford experiment where...
with the prison guards? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, of course, this had to happen. James just wrote in and says, stop telling us what to watch, Scott.
that's my shtick, Bob.
I know.
I know.
But, you know, there have been studies that indicate that the further up the corporate ladder you get, when you get up around boards and CEOs and stuff, the prevalence of sociopaths and psychopaths far exceeds the occurrence in the population writ large. Going back to the toothpaste story, Lady B just wrote in and said, that Oreo toothpaste story just screams, I've got it better than you. I'm better than you. It's funny you would do something I would never do, because you're in a worse place than I am. Too bad you're not as lucky as me. Let me remind you of how lucky I have it. I will punish you for not being as lucky as I am. Every day we hear stories about newly emboldened sociopaths. But what are we going to do about them? The uber-rich need to be taught a lesson, too. We all eat, sleep, shit, and die. All of us. If there's a God, we'll all stand in judgment. If not, we all return to dust, to be stepped on and shit upon by those who find our ancient remains. I'm so fucking tired of this timeline, says Lady B.
Bingo, Lady B. Big bingo.
Oh, and by the way,
diagonally up and down and fill the car.
So the slow kid who got neglected to death in Oklahoma, he had spent his young life working around an auction farm, an auction barn near the town of Fairview, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Described as a rambunctious boy with a disarming smile and whimsical charm. Well, speaking of pranks, they set fire to some hay bales and opened the valves of some tank batteries that let out oil and salt water into a nearby creek. The lawyer for his mama said, it may have been a boneheaded thing for kids to do, but it certainly didn't warrant a death sentence.
Jeez. Well, stuff like this, and there's worse stuff besides, you know, surrounding Oklahoma, makes me glad that I only lived there for a short time back in the early 90s, mid-90s, and got the hell out of there. I was in Tulsa, which was a little different than like Oklahoma City and some of the far-flung precincts of the state. But it's very, very strange places I've lived over the years, and Tulsa was certainly one of them. Although that's where I did meet Pat Richardson, who was a radio guy on a right-wing radio station, and is still to this day. We talk a couple of times a year. We don't agree on anything politically, but he is a nice person, his politics notwithstanding. And I know that seems like a contradiction, but and I wonder sometimes whether he believes half of the stuff that he spouts, because he's kind of a blustery personality, which I guess you have to be on that type of radio. But I don't know. He was one of my friends in Tulsa, and I love him as much as I can. It's just that politically he's like a reprobate, you know. If he believes and buys into all that crap, but Jesus. One of his guests that he used to have on a lot was who was that Orange County Congressman Bob Dornan. Dornan, was that his name?
Yeah.
B1 Bob, I think his nickname was. Ah, there was a piece of work. But anyway, I guess that's all I've got for Monday, and I'll go and free the line for someone else. But that was fun. Steve was fun. What was the name of the show again?
Steve Trash Science.
All right. I'll let my KPBS, which is, they've got a lot on the ball as our local PBS station. I'll let them, I'll put a bug in their ear, as it were, and they'll go, ooh, a bug. But they love bugs. They love, man, those nature shows, some of them, I can't watch them because they're just too weird. The ocelot is doing other things with another ocelot, and it gets all icky. And I have limits, you know, so.
Sure. And in point of fact, there are some of those things that I just can't watch before bedtime.
Because, and God, this is,
there will be spiders and creepy crawly things in my dreams, and I just don't like that.
From the way Steve describes the program, it's got to be better than some of these stupid-ass cartoons that they show during the kids' programming in the morning on KPBS. I mean, and maybe they're done by professional educators and, you know, they know more about reaching kids than I do, but I can't even look at them. They grate at my nerves because they're not Warner Brothers cartoons.
Well, the thing. I mean, you know what the golden era was, and there's just not much there to like.
Speaking of which, I spent a couple of hours today at the county agency that will hopefully assist me in a thing that I'm qualified for regarding SNAP or CalFresh benefits. There's a new law that just became effective in June that disabled people on Social Security will get more benefits than anybody thought we could ever possibly qualify for. And apparently, I'll find out on Thursday. I got to go for my meeting with them, and they'll tell me if I do qualify, which will be a great blessing. But you'll never guess what was playing on one of the TVs in the waiting room while we were all waiting for our number to be called.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers cartoons.
It beats the hell out of the Weather Channel or Fox.
Goddamn right, Bob. Absolutely right. I think the world would be a better place if we were force-fed more Bugs Bunny and Daffy and Roadrunner and Yosemite Sam and the rest.
Oh, without a doubt.
There are valuable lessons to be found in those vintage Warner cartoons. And, you know, kids loved them, but adults got the, you know, the content on some different level. And I can watch them, even the ones like Three Stooges that I've seen of all of the episodes a zillion times. I can watch Warner Brothers cartoons, even though I could probably recite them in my sleep.
I'm the same way.
I know, because you do recite them on the show. You're not asleep, but you get my point.
Yeah, and I saw an article the other day from some guy who was a critic of some sort and of some note, who pointed out, I think it was actually Leonard Maltin.
He would know, because he's pretty on the ball with that stuff.
Oh, he said that he was introduced to classical music by Warner Brothers.
Yeah. The opera with the woman.
What's Opera? What's Opera Doc? And
yeah.
And others, you know, other stuff as well.
Killed the rabbit. Rabbit.
The bunny. The bunny of Seville.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to my shop. Let me trim your top. Let me clip your mop. Daintily. Yep, you sing it. There went fundraising for the rest of the evening. Hey, Scott, I'm going to roll, my friend. You have yourself a good evening.
And I guarantee you, Bob, there is no other talk show in the known universe that's doing dialogue from 1940s-era Warner cartoons.
That's probably why we don't have a million listeners. But,
well, yeah. Maybe that's why we do have the listeners we have, because we're a discerning lot.
Good deal. All right.
All right.
And
take
I'm glad of it. Take care. See you, Scott. Bye now.
See ya.
Robert in Australia went looking around and says, I found what I assume is a pilot or proof of concept episode of Steve Trash Science on Vimeo. Just look for Pollution Steve Trash Science on Vimeo. And you'll find it. Vimeo, Vimeo.com. P.S. Vintage Warner Brothers cartoons are available on DVD. Always love the sequence of the massive redwood being chopped down, taken to a factory, and then turned into a single toothpick. Yep. And I had an unpleasant thing happen to me Saturday. You know, I told you Saturday was a beautiful day. Well, it started out kind of gray and gloomy, but then it burned off to become a beautiful day. But before that happened, I was out on the highway with Ferg early in the morning, and there was absolutely nothing I could have done to have avoided it save staying home, and then somebody else probably would have gotten it. But this exquisite, humongous, pileated woodpecker, a red-headed woodpecker, flew out of the median and straight across the windshield of my car. At the time it struck the windshield, it was probably a foot from my face. Made me kind of grateful for the windshield, but at the same time, really bummed out that I had just wasted Woody Woodpecker. Maybe the woodpecker was just tired of it all. But it kind of screwed with my day. It did. And what was the pileated woodpecker doing? There's no trees in the median. What are you doing there? What's wrong with you? Yeah. And again, we got about 18 minutes in the program, and we need to raise another 40 bucks to match Charlene in Rhode Island's challenge within a challenge. And then that would make it. And then we need another $75 to finish off Bruce's Memorial Challenge, courtesy of Laborman and Ralph's and our anonymous member of the community who makes that possible every month. We did have somebody on the stress line. Now we don't have anybody on the stress line. Okay. No, Ace, I didn't. 70 miles an hour, we were well past. Did you at least pick up the woodpecker carcass and throw it on the acorn? We're allowed to do that here in West Virginia, as a matter of law. But no, I didn't. I figured it'd probably just not real tasty at that point. Oh, but speaking of West Virginia, and we've been talking about morons, congratulations to the Senate of the state of West Virginia. They were hell and be damned today that they were going to pass an education bill to, among other things, impose charter schools on a state that desperately doesn't need them. An unlimited number of charter schools. Remember the story from a couple of weeks back about the Republican senator here in West Virginia who plagiarized a think tank, a charter school, right-wing think tank's language about the wonders of charter schools? Yeah. Well, we're going to have, if this passes, we'll have an unlimited number of charter schools. And the other thing that the Republicans did is they officially banned strikes by teachers in West Virginia. They tucked this all in under the euphemistically titled Student Success Act. The teachers were out in force protesting all weekend long at the state capitol. They chanted, charter schools no, public schools yes, because this boondoggle of a bill will take public money and use it to support charter schools, which as likely as not in a state like West Virginia will be up to their eyebrows in fundamentalist religion. And on the third day, God invented the Remington's bolt-action rifle so man could hunt the dinosaurs and the homosexuals. Amen. And so, one Republican senator, who herself is a teacher, said, I have to apologize if I sometimes slip into teacher mode, but listening's not the same as agreeing. We can listen and we can agree or disagree. I'm here to represent more than just the unions in West Virginia. Damn Skippy, lady, Patricia Rucker. You're there to represent the religion industry and the corporate donors who line your pockets with campaign donations. And so hopefully they'll be able to break the teachers union the way they broke the building trades when they got rid of prevailing wage and imposed right to work for shitty wages in this state. Let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Bye.
What's up, man?
Hey, beware woodpeckers that promote charter schools.
You know, that's probably what it was. In which case, it had it coming.
You know, I never saw a woodpecker up close till I moved down here. But
there are some smaller ones, but that redheaded woodpecker is a big son of a gun.
It's a big. It looks just like Woody. Do you remember? You get me all excited. Do you remember the old Woody Woodpecker cartoons, like probably from the 50s or late 40s?
Yeah.
Early 50s, when he was kind of rough and ready. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like you said, I was shocked. First of all, they make a lot of noise. They are loud as hell. It's like, wow, how do you not break your neck doing that? You know, engaging in that activity. And then when you see them, the ones that are in my yard, you know, they're like a foot tall. And they're not scared or anything. They just look at you and they just keep going. But they literally look like woodpeckers.
Yeah, and the other thing, I don't know, maybe you might not remember, there was a novel back in the late 70s, early 80s by an author named Tom Robbins called Still Life with Woodpecker. And it had a redheaded woodpecker on the cover flying across a pack of Camel cigarettes with a wooden match in its mouth. And that came immediately to mind when I saw him. Or yeah, it was a him. I don't think a female woodpecker would be so stupid as to fly into the windshield of an automobile.
Being cognizant, though, that's good.
Yeah. But it was it screwed with me because of the cover of the book and because of Woody Woodpecker and just because I hate killing things.
I wonder if it was an Ohio blue-tip match, because that could be trouble.
No, it was one of those strike anywheres, the red with the white top.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of...
You know, you can't buy those anymore, I don't think.
Well, you can... Right, the strike anywhere, the camping matches. Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of the cowboy in the old westerns rakes across his jeans and lights his stogie.
Right. Before he pulls out his python, Colt Python, the foot-long revolver, and goes, I'm going to blow you away, son.
Yeah, exactly. But my favorite instance of that, though, is from the Munsters, when Herman does that and catches his pants on fire and says, that never happens to John Wayne. I'm simple that way, though.
Hey, man, we have to laugh where we can these days.
Hey, you know what? We're not by ourselves on this call.
No.
I think Tracy's with us. Are you there, Tracy?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
What's up, lady?
Nothing. I'm still, hi, y'all. I'm still recovering when they see us. And
oh my God, don't bring that shit up.
You have to bring that shit up. You have to bring it up.
Oh my God.
I've never, I texted Bob. I'm like, I'm trying very desperately not to bite my TV and throw stuff at it. And then I remember how much I pay for my TV, so no. But it's just, I know most people know the story about these five young men who were wrongly convicted of a brutal attack and rape of the Central Park jogger that happened to be
white. Central Park Five.
The Central Park Five. I knew about the story, and I was on the West Coast when this happened, and it happened in '89. I was a new mother. Alex was, just about to turn a year old because he was born in '88. This happened in '89, and of course, on the West Coast, you only got the media version of the story. And, calling them animals and wilding and wolf packing. And they turn children into criminals. They criminalized young black men. They never even investigated anybody else. There were a bunch of kids in the park doing what kids do, stupid shit. Like you were saying about the kid that died in the jail. They were they were in the park doing some boneheaded shit. But none of it warranted, spending all this, losing their youth and their childhood in jail. But I think
think you guys had that on the West Coast, the wolf pack. See, on the East Coast at that time, that's what we had because the, city.
No, I never had, even heard of anything called wolf packs.
It was a flash mob of the day. And it was, I'm telling you, it was scary. It was dangerous because that's what kids did then. They would just. Anything else to do,
some kids, but it's just the fact that they, these young men, they were, from the ages of 14 to 16 years old, they were, they were kept from their parents. They were interrogated for like hours, 14, 15, 16 hours. Their parents, they wouldn't allow their parents in the room. On top of that, they intimidated their parents. Out of all the children, and emphasis on children, only one mother knew her rights and her son's rights. And when she found out where he was, because they even called the parents to tell the parents where they were. There was one that found out, and they're like, why did you get here soon? And he's like, I was at work. And how you were saying earlier, Bob, while more people are protesting in the streets because we got bills to pay, we got rent to pay, and you don't have the time. And like you said, it is by design because they made sure that they have, loosened the rights for workers and unions and stuff like that. And we have a gig economy. People can't take time off for work. People can't have a decent job. People working two or three jobs. Who's going to have time to protest? Who's going to have time to be in the streets? And these, these children.
But Tracy, let me ask you this. I remember I've been arrested a couple of times. And I'm going to tell you, don't ever sign. First of all, you always say, I want my attorney. Don't ever. And what they do, booking is slow. In a city, booking is very slow. They wake you up in the middle of the night. And remember, you don't have to do shit to get arrested. All you have to do is just exist, especially if you're black. Now, the instance I'm talking about, I was not wrong.
You mean blacking while black?
Breathing.
And I'll never forget my attorney. And I'm talking like I was up against some big shit, okay? Like, it was a problem. Like, I could have bought a house and a car, like a new house and a new car for what I had to pay to just maintain my freedom. However, I learned a lot. So the attorney was like, well, it's a good thing that, they wake you up in the middle of the night and don't ever, what my point is this, they should never, I think that's illegal. You should never have a minor sign a statement without their parents present, number one. First of all, you should never sign anything without your attorney. I'm just saying that for everybody who's out there listening, because it's easy to get arrested and it's hard to get out. You don't even have to do anything wrong to get arrested. Now, I'm a professional person. I just didn't have the right clothes on that day. You know, that's why black folks have to wear a suit and tie all the time. It's like a uniform. You know, that's a little bit of
yeah, that's why people had Sunday go-to-meeting clothes on when they were getting a hell beat out of them on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Right. Well, because you have to have, you know, we as black people, we have to have an air of respectability in order to keep us from getting our ass.
And you know what? That was taught and preached. Now compare that.
Yep.
Compare that with the anti-war protests. And,
right, the hippies. Right. Out there with bare feet and Birkenstocks and ripped up T-shirts. Yeah,
privilege.
You know,
privilege.
I would like to go to the store in my Levi's and they're torn up. You know, like, you know what? No, I can't.
But the overall thrust of all that is that those, you know, whether it was the Hoovervilles and the tent cities of the Depression. Those were people who had everything taken from them that they had to lose except their lives. And in the case of the anti-war protests in Vietnam, those were people whose asses were on the line, as Scott noted in an email earlier, and who themselves had not moved far enough into the economic miracle that is Merca, that they had been lashed to the mast with all their debts and obligations. They were students. And so the purpose of all of it, look, consider the fact that even student protests are made much less likely now by virtue of the fact that kids who do get to go to college go there with a shit ton of debt hanging over their head from the minute they enter freshman orientation. So they best not protest either.
Preach it.
And everybody just best go along to get along, keep your head down, and hope they don't come for you. That's the way this is. I mean, that's the way the system dealt with upheavals in it to make sure that it never happens again.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Yeah.
Tracy, because you're building on something bigger. You're building it's worrying me, and I'm glad you brought that up, the price of tuition, because how are we going to have intellectual people who can fight the system if people can't afford to go to college, only the elite? Now, this is my question. What is going to happen? What is going to happen when people can't go to school? Like I said, they're not educated. They can't fight back. And then, I don't know if you, Tracy, and you, Bob, saw William Barr at that interview in his cabin or wherever he was in Alaska. I found that interview chilling. It was absolutely chilling. He's a monster.
Yeah, he is.
The Attorney General is a fucking monster. If people aren't listening, we're in fucking trouble. I'm telling you, we are in fucking trouble.
Well, if you want a little bit of a bright spot, Todd, I can tell you that next week, the House will take up the issue of whether to hold William Barr in contempt of Congress. The floor vote.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the floor vote will happen next week. At which point, if he's held in contempt, the House Judiciary Committee can take him to court, where hopefully it will not be heard by this McFadden dude. Oh, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to sue the Attorney General. Darlene sent me that story about McFadden shooting down the lawsuit earlier this evening, and said this is going to be some bad shit, and it is. If that thing
it
becomes
is.
Anything resembling precedent, game over.
Game over. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Tracy, I know Bob already knows it. Tracy, Bill Barr said that he said we have to. Well, you see, the president felt very aggrieved. The intelligence services were investigating him, and we have to get to the bottom of this and figure out what's going on. And in the meantime, we have to tamp down these things. All right, you see, so what he's saying, and he said it's ironic. So the thieves are saying that they've been stolen from.
Right.
It is unfucking. I was like, I cannot believe. Even the interviewer, she kind of was looking at him like, are you fucking crazy? That shit, everybody needs to see that. I'm telling you, this is frightening. Because he knows how much power he has. I don't know that he's mentally ill like the president, but I know he's a lapdog. But
no, it's overreacting like here. I mean, nobody's overreacting. And the fact that, I mean, and it's the entire, I mean, because Bill Barr is the top cop in the country. He's over the entire, you know, the justice system in this country. And so it, you know, shit trickles down from the top, you know. So it's like, you know, you have people like Bill Barr, and then like this chick, you know, that commit, you know, that lied and plotted and framed these young men. Not even framed, because there was no evidence. There was no evidence at all linking these young men, these children, to this crime. But Linda Ferris, and they told her this, and Linda Ferris is like, no, and her and the cops. So, you know, when they, the argument about there's only one, you know, all cops are bad, there's only, you know, but the problem is there's collusion, there's coercion, there's, what's the word I'm looking for? Compliance, complacency, what's the word? Where, you know, people go along just to go along and they know it's wrong, but they just like, especially in the police and the district attorney's offices, but they don't stand up.
They're acquiescing to the system.
Yeah. And so it's not, you know, you can't do diversity trainings and stuff like that when people have a mindset. You need to make sure these people don't even get into power in the first place and root the motherfuckers out.
Tracy, have you heard Bob and Tracy? Now the prosecutors, they're not even blinking, batting an eye. They don't feel they were asked, how do you feel about this? And they were like, well, I did the right thing at the time.
Yeah.
They're not even
they are so entrenched, and so it's like in their wrongness, and they have convinced themselves that they did right by these young men, that, you know. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, see, this is the kind of thing. It's that, you know, get it. I want to make a name for myself. I want to become, because like the Linda Ferristine became a big time, you know, mystery writer. And it was actually considered at one point by Clinton to be attorney general. How frightening would that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Because you already see how she felt about young black lives back, you know, during this, you know, what happened in 1989. Could you imagine? Had she become
Do you remember when
general,
Trump's face popped
States?
Up on the television?
Right. And here's the scary part. The one man, young man whose mother actually knew her rights, and they're like watching him talking about, you know, they should be executed and all this. And she's like, girl, don't even worry about him. His 15 minutes of fame are going to be over. Yeah, no, 30 years later, he's the president of the fucking United States.
And they're sitting there drinking Cutty Sark, and she's like, I'm not trying to do any spoilers, but I'm telling you, it's so much, this is such rich, this is like demi-glace, it's such a rich sauce, you cannot eat it all at once. It's unbelievable.
And the fact of the matter is that nothing has changed in 30 years.
Well, y'all are both getting an amen. Y'all are both getting an amen from Lady D. She says, don't have time for details, but what Tracy and Todd are saying is true. The stuff young white boys get away with and usually takes for granted, shit. Some of y'all good white folks have no idea. That young man who died in prison shouldn't have died, but what he did harmed the environment and possibly livestock, not to mention wild animals. Folks had to clean that shit up and spend their money and time to do it. Boys will be boys. Had he not had mental challenges, he'd be back walking the streets. He died in jail. Black kids doing that shit would have been shot on sight. Prove me wrong. Well, I can't. Nor will I try. But it is a symptom, and the way I it's a symptom of the overall meanness of this culture. It is a level of meanness that is 400 plus years old. It's inescapable. And it is always the marginalized, it is always the weaker who bear the brunt of the damnable viciousness?
Because, see, black kids, young black boys and young black girls, you know, black boys, you know how, you know, the white boys will be boys. Black boys can't, there's no such thing as boys will be boys. When Alex was little, because we moved up to the Valley when he was 4 years old. And once he got to a certain age, because most of his, you know, that he went to school with were white. And I had to press upon him, you cannot do the same thing that your white friends do. You cannot say to cops and buck up on cops the way your white friends do. You can't be running around in the malls and all that.
No, because by the time you're 12 years old, you're a grown man, and the cops in Cleveland will blow you away within 30 seconds.
Exactly. So you cannot
Tamir Rice.
You cannot do the same thing. You know, you cannot play with your water guns or stuff like that in your yards or in your front yards or whatever, because the cops might, because you're black, you're playing with a weapon, so, you know, you will be shot on sight. You cannot do the same things. And I should not have, like I said, I went to almost about to slap the shit out of my brother-in-law when he was whining about, I get stereotyped too, because I'm like, fuck you, shut up. You don't ever have to have this conversation with your son.
And, you know, here's it, and this is, you know, this is a little bit weird, but it's worth pointing out. I was in the dollar store the other day, and it's pool season, go to the lake season, what have you. And so there was a little 10-pack of transparent, brightly colored little water pistols.
Uh-huh.
And I later, because last Monday we spent some time at the lake with our eldest daughter and the grandkids, and as I was walking back to the car, I noticed that one of those, it was orange, transparent water pistol, laying on the ground. Some kid was probably crying about it somewhere, you know, I think like that. Lost his water pistol, lost her water pistol. But the thing is, if you go now and you look at real pistols, you know, once upon a time I would have said, you know, at least nobody's going to be at risk because of this, because it's obvious there are no neon lime green pistols. Or neon orange pistols, or neon pink pistols, or neon purple pistols. Well, guess what?
Oh, yeah.
There are now. Because because pistols are now marketed to women, mainly, to have an element of fashion sense about them. So
it's
you
an
can,
accessory, Bob.
So you can get a little purple or pink 380 semi-auto that has no safety on it to tuck in your holster bra. And, well, and then comes the story where the gun just went off. It's gonna take a lot of work to make things better. And I frankly say that nothing will get better until the National Ruble Association does not exist anymore. They need to be sued. They need to be sued into non-existence, the way the Klan and Operation Rescue were. Yeah, go ahead, Todd.
Because I think this is important, because you've been driving in the point about the NRA and the money, and people see. I don't know, something is big about this, because Butina admitted that's what she was doing. Butina, whatever you want, the Russian spy, whatever how you want to pronounce her name. Now, around two weeks ago, NPR interviewed her from her correction facility in Virginia, and she was on the prison phone. It was a two-part interview, it's obviously archived on NPR's website. But the very last question that the interviewer asked her, "What do you want Americans to know? And don't you know that she towed Putin's line, like we just want we." We need to be friendly with America. Like the same thing Putin says, the same thing Trump says. They're all, she's a spy. She's afraid for her life. She's still like preaching that line. She is still preaching that line after all that she did. But do you remember when Obama said, these people are clutching their guns and their Bible. Remember mm-hmm. that?
Yep. See? And, oh, they had a conniption, didn't they?
They had a conniption, but you see, he was briefed by intelligence. He knew what he was saying. And we got to get our narrative. I'm sorry, the DNC is looking weak. They need to get that narrative out there right now that Obama approached McConnell. And by the way, do you remember we were talking about McConnell and how powerful he has come to be in the Western world, like how you really see
America? Sure.
Everybody's now, they're talking about it now. Anyway, but yeah, so that's what's going on with that. Now, I find it very interesting. It's very interesting that DNC is not pushing that narrative to let people know, because apparently a lot of people are just, they don't understand that the former president approached Mitch McConnell and refused to come together, you know, as a team to say, hey, we're being attacked, you know, cyber attack over our election. He said, no, I'm not going to do it. And if you do go forward, you know, I'm going to blame it on you. Am I making this up?
No, you are not. And he damned well had a reason for doing it. And one of these days we might find out that reason. Hey, y'all, I need to get out of here because we're 12 minutes.
I know you got
to
go.
We're 12 minutes past, yeah, but I appreciate the conversation. I always do. And we'll get after it again tomorrow. What do you say?
Sounds like a plan.
All right, y'all take care and have a good night.
Good night.
Later. Tracy and Todd, I figured I would just join the call together because those usually work out. Those calls work out really well, as you can tell by what just happened. Hey, big thanks to Rusty. Thank you, Rusty, very very kindly. Rusty just finished off. Finished off the challenge within a challenge that Charlene in Rhode Island put forward. So thank you. And that means there's $65 remaining on Bruce's Memorial Challenge for the first broadcast day of the new month. Overnight, if you're listening to this podcast, it has not been met. So thank you very, very kindly if you will help us finish that last $65. Thanks, Rusty. Thanks, Jude, for jumping in on the challenge. Thank you to Charlene for making it. And thank you to Laborman and Ralphs and our anonymous contributor who make the Bruce's Challenge happen at the beginning of every month. Thank you all so much. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you earlier this evening in the chat room to Sparky. Thank you to Steve in the chat room. Thanks as well to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.